Blog Talk Radio.
Life is easy when you're up on the mountain and you've got peace of mind like you've never known. But things change when you're down in the valley. Don't for you're never alone. For the God on the mountain is still God in the valley. When things go wrong, He'll make them right. When you're up on the mountain, but talk comes so easy when life's at its best. Now we're down in the valley of trials and temptations. That's where your faith is really put to the test. For the God on the mountain is still God in the valley. When things go wrong, He'll make them right.
Good evening and welcome to the Cricket Show. As usual, every Sunday evening at this time, there's no other place to be but at the Cricket Show. Just call us at 1-515-605-9850. Again, the number is 1-515-605-9850. Good evening and welcome to the Cricket Show. We have a great show in store for you, so stay tuned, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and tell everyone that we're on. You can find us on the internet at blogtalkradio.com/The Cricket Show. Again, blogtalkradio.com/The Cricket Show. I am your host with me, Leon Francis, and Dennis Heath, and some fine, fine ladies with us as well. Mertis Nisbet all the way in New York, Donna Brown all the way in New York as well, and soon to hear from Heisen Christian all the way from London, England. Stay tuned and you will hear the entire show. It will go for 3 full hours and we will fill you in with the topics that we're going to cover tonight. But as we usually do, we just ask God's presence in the house tonight and we say, Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you this evening. We thank you for giving us an opportunity to have yet another show. We pray you will let it go on without any interruptions, Lord. We pray for the ones who have helped us financially and those who have given us moral support over the years. We trust, Lord, that you will bless each and every participant here tonight and let them be clear and understandable as possible, Lord. Let us have a wonderful show tonight, Lord, one to be remembered. We pray especially for the ones who are not too well, the ones we have took time out to ask for your blessings and healing touches, namely Mr. Nat Patel, Bobsy Nisbet and her dear daughter, Murchis, David Christian, Dr. Leroy Lashley and his daughter, Lisa, Connie Whitley, Ellie Matt, Everett Carter, Oliver Solomon, Elkamita Willett, and Dr. Roger Brownlord. You also ask your special blessings on my relatives, namely Wentworth Francis, Gabriel Francis, Helbert Francis, Julian Francis, and Sharon Francis, Lord. As well as Dennis Kelman, Lord. We have not heard from him in a while, but we just hope that you are constantly in touch with him, Lord. We pray especially for Joseph Gunthrop and Mona Daniels. Dr. Eugene Francis, a lifetime friend of mine, Lord. I pray for him as well, Lord. We pray for Fillmore Hallpike, Earl Stevens, and Mr. Linford McKenzie, Lord. We pray for all the others who have not expressed their concerns, Lord, because you know their concerns, Lord. We ask you to touch them from the bottom of their feet to the top of their head, Lord. We pray you just continue to show them improvement, Lord, and give them the hope that they can be back on their feet again, Lord. We pray for our nation, Lord, as it goes through some perilous times, Lord, and the nations around the world who are struggling with wars or famines and you know what, Lord. We pray for everyone, Lord. We know you put them here that they may enjoy what you have built, and we pray that they will enjoy it. We ask all these in your precious name, and our God people say, amen.
Amen.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for that, folks. Just want to call out the new merchants to give us a report on my room, not my roomie, but Ma Bobsy.
Ma Bobsy.
Yeah, Ma Bobsy, that's what Audley would say. Yes, and of course we ask Donna as well, and then we turn our attention to Mr. Dennis.
Okay, good afternoon, Leon, Dennis, Donna. And I hope Hyacinth is doing okay. Mother Bobsy is flourishing, thank God. She's improving a lot with the walking. So we are very grateful for that. And the spirit is upbeat. So we're glad. All good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
So we are thankful.
That's so reassuring. We are so grateful for that, Mistress. We are so, so happy for her. Give her our regards for, you know, let her know that we have her in our prayers and thoughts. Okay, thanks for that
report.
Wonderful report. How about you, Donna? Good evening to you, and just let us know what is going on in your neck of the woods and anything of concerns that you may want us to know about.
Good afternoon, good evening. Good morning, whoever is listening.
Mm-hmm.
From Leon to Murphy, to Hyacinth, to Dennis. Good night. We are on the cool side here in New York, overcast, but we are doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, that's good news. That's very good news. Cool side, and we are overcast and looking for some rain because we haven't gotten some rain for about a couple weeks. So we're grateful for that. And how about you, Dennis?
Yes, good evening to you, Leon, and Mertris, and Donna, and of course all the listeners out there, wherever you are, welcome to the Cricket Show. As Leon pointed out, we are at blogtalkradio.com/thecricketshow. Out here in Southern California, I am roasting at a very, very deep temperature, 90 degrees out there in the sun and sky. But I'm here and I'm happy to be back with another edition of the Cricket Show, and you too can call us and tell us about your weather, or at least join in, call 1-515-605-9850, 1-515-605-9850, and just set your reminder to join us every Sunday at this time, 6 p.m. Eastern time zone. We would love to hear from you. Back
indeed.
To you.
Back to you as well, because we have a great guest coming on tonight with us, and we hope she can help cool the temperature down in your neck of the woods. She goes by the name of Dr. Mary, or Dawn Mary Armstrong, and she comes from the School of Social Genetics and Sciences. So we'll hear from her a little around about 8 o'clock. We hope she can find the way to get through to us. She's coming to the same medium as Hyacinth. We do hope that she is having it okay coming through to us. And Dennis, lots of news there for us to report. We just talked to you about our special guest at 8. And I know you have spoken to her. But we have some more items we want to cover tonight. Time for me. And Dennis, we want to cover the T23 ICC Awards. Have you heard about that this week, Dennis? I didn't remember to...
The ICC Awards?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for you to share with us, Leon.
2023, the awards are out, and guess who is the Male Cricket of the Year? I wouldn't share it with you yet. And who is the Male ODI Player of the Year? And who is the Men's Emerging Player or Cricketer of the Year? Men's Cricketer of the Year. And who is the Men's T20 Cricketer of the Year? And who is the Men's Associate Cricketer of the Year? As well as who is the Women's Cricketer of the Year? We won't share this with you until a little later. And everybody's on board. So we can have our say. The Women's Cricketer of the Year and the Women's T20 Cricketer of the Year and the Women's Associate Cricketer of the Year and the Women's ODI Cricketer of the Year and then the Women's Emerging Cricketer of the Year. And of course, we also have the Teams of the Year, and we'll share that with our panelists, and hopefully we can have some great discussion among that. And may I just tell you that there's only one West Indian, and he's not a male.
Female.
And that goes without saying. Everybody knows who that ought to be. Right? Well, you wait until the others come, Dennis. We'll tell them all about it. And the big news coming out of the Caribbean 4-Day Championship, or the West Indies 4-Day Championship, as what it's called, is the Guyana Happy Eagles. Why such a name, Happy? Happy Eagles, the name of an eagle is Happy? Happy Eagle, they are the champions. And who is the runner-up? You know, it's the Windward Islands. They're getting closer. They have never won the championship before, and they're getting closer. We thought perhaps they would do it this year, but the Leeward Islands really, really had held them out from getting that coveted title over the years. So we'll talk more about that a little later on. And of course, Dennis and ladies, we do have the ladies from the West Indies. They are on tour of Pakistan, and believe you me, they have won their first two matches. And this one by a narrow margin, but nevertheless, they have won it. And we'll tell you more about that later as well. We have their latest county scores, the results of the Division 1 and the Division 2. And guess what is coming in the news? Powell pushes for Narayan's return to West Indies squad for the T20 World Cup. Would you drag him out of a retirement, Joe? Dennis? Or would you keep him in retirement? What say you?
Well, let me put it this way, Leon. I know he has told us that he has retired from international cricket, and his focus now is on the IPL. But nonetheless, he does have his current cricket form. The IPL suggests that he might well have a very strong role to play should he be picked for the West Indies, should he rescind his retirement and come back out of retirement to suit up for Cricket West Indies, he could well make a big, big contribution. So we'll yet to see. If
not Carl unusual, not unusual though. It has mm-hmm. happened before. You've seen boxers come out of retirement and almost got killed. And why mm-hmm. can't a cricketer come out of retirement? And I believe if he were to do that, it would be only one series he would be. But I don't see anything wrong. But would they pick him? Would it cause some concern among the other folks who are playing in the region? I think it would cause some controversy. Because they're saying because of his action and he is inclined to be called. But I can't see them not calling him in the IPL and going to call him in the World Cup. You can't have a double standard. Cricket is cricket. And if you're playing and you are pelting, you should be called. If you are legit, there should be no concern. What say you?
Well, I believe, Leon, if he was to be brought back into the team, he doesn't necessarily have to bowl because I know the West Indies.
Good point.
PWI
has
a lot of bowlers on hand, so you know it's no way that he would have to bowl if that is a concern. Though I've watched him bowl in the IPL, and I'm not sure that I see anything in that action that would.
Neither me. I'm looking with the eagle eye, and I can't see anything but good, perfect delivery. So only that he hides the ball behind his back, that is illegal. That is not in my view.
But I don't know that you can say he's hiding the ball. The fact of the matter is his mode of bowling is to keep the ball behind him and his arm behind him and then whipping it over. I mean, if you look at the out of the ordinary bowling action of Madhusudhana from Sri Lanka.
Yes.
I mean, his action is way, way out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, no one calls him for throwing, and there's no reason why Narayan should be called for throwing because I don't think he's throwing. That's my personal decision.
But what an improvement he has made with his batting. I tell you, he is just extraordinary. And anyone would love to have him in their side. If the West Indies don't pick him, and he's out of retirement, and he hasn't played for a while, can he play for another country? Maybe USA would buy him.
Well, I guess he could do that, you know. But, you know, Leon, I have a confession to make, and that is several months ago, I guess after the debacle of the West Indies in the World Cup, previous last World Cup, and the name Narayan was mentioned as a possible call-up, and Russell, I was very much one of those on the fence thinking, no way, this should not work. But, you know, over the past couple of years, we've watched both of these gentlemen, Russell and Narayan, in the IPL, and they've been very, very productive. They've been in fine form. And I think now that we've observed this, compared to what we have in the Caribbean right now, I think they could well earn, not deserve, but earn a place in the squad, if not the entire T20 team for the World Cup.
I don't think there is any question about Russell. The only question about mm-hmm. is that folks may say, well, where was Narayan when we needed him long ago? But that is up to him. He is happy. He's making money. He has a year-round contract. And with his performance this year, it only tells me that he is going to be asking for the sums of money that you have given to Stark, who is not performing at all for all the money that you've given him. So,
but, you know, one point you made there, Leon, that he has a year-round contract. The question is, will his franchise owners allow him to play for the West Indies in the T20 World Cup?
Oh, yes. All contracts are sold about that. I don't know if that is in his contract, but all the contracts are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Allowing you to play for your home team. But for another franchise, It may be a no-no. But for the West Indies, they can't, because that's one of the conditions. But he can do anything he likes because he's retired. You see, he can do anything he likes because he retired. No one can ask him no question.
Well, only if he's got a...
He's bound by that particular team. Mm. But Russell has the same contract, though. He has the same.
Yes. Leon, you may have noticed that we've been joined by Dr. Marie Armstrong. We're not ready for her yet, but I think she's coming early to join.
Yes.
Why don't you say hello to her, or would you want to?
Let's just say good evening to you, Dr. Dawn Marie. We're happy to
see
you.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes,
we can
we
hear
you.
Oh, hiya. Thank you for the invite. I'm just going to listen into some of the discussion before we commence. At the top
right.
of the hour. Is that okay?
Okay,
thank
good.
You so much.
Glad
we
to
look forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, no worries.
We want to extend a great welcome to you when you come in later.
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay, so hold tight and we will be right with you as soon as we are ready for you.
Yeah, no worries.
Mm-hmm. So Dennis, as you were saying,
yes, I feel strongly that he may well have a contract with the franchise, but the franchise, on the other hand, knows the value of a trusted player and a player with some talent. So hopefully they would release him to play in the IPL because he's only increasing his value and his worth. As far as they're concerned,
but for all intent and purposes, he has not. I don't know if a player who has retired from international cricket is loose to do anything. West Indies Cricket Board has no control over him, so that's another thing.
Right, but
it may not.
Remember, as happened to that Khan fellow from Pakistan recently, the one who was banned by the. United, the Emirates board previously had not been playing for his country in Pakistan, and he signed a franchise contract with the Emirates for their franchise, their T20, their T10 series. But then when his country approached him and said, look, we need you, come out of retirement and become, help us, he said, yes, I will. And of course, his franchise owners back in the Emirates were very angry with him, and consequently they banned him from playing for 5 years. So, yeah, he's free to revert to his country in terms of his loyalty. But
Powell is asking, I think he's inclined to bring him back. And I think Sammy is also on the same wavelength. Who knows? And he does not say that he won't. But who knows, he may just want to give us the finest thing.
I know that in the recent concluded press conference from CWI, Sammy, the white ball coach, Darren Sammy, the white ball coach, was very, very happy to see Rovman Powell. So I guess if Rovman can persuade Narayan, it's a done deal. But we've been joined by Coach.
Our special coach, yes. Go right ahead, Dennis.
We will take this opportunity to revert to our regular chat with the coach, the coach's corner. So the Cricket Show USA, the Cricket Hall of Fame USA, and the American Cricket Education Council, ACEC, is pleased to welcome the weekly joint collaborative broadcast of the Coach's Corner. Of the Coach's Corner is to provide coaching, education, and expert views, information, oral and practical assistance while helping to educate those seeking to understand and to become actively involved in the sport of cricket nationally and internationally. A segment of the Coach's Corner will run from 6:15 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard and will feature Jatin Patel, Cricket Hall of Famer, and multi-sport coach, administrator, and director of the Cricket Hall of Fame. Good evening to you, Coach, and welcome again.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Coach.
All right. Thank you for joining us once more. I think today we'll take a look in our discussion around pride and prize. And I'd like to just split this into two segments. We'll deal with the pride part of this topic first, and then we'll segue onto the prize. So let me ask you, Coach, can you just define for us what pride is?
Pride is normally kind of achievement, which is reputable as well as respected by all for some sort of excellency achieved, which is very difficult for the many others, right? For example, playing for country, it's a huge pride. Or have an honor or some sort of reward for doing excellency. Those are known as a pride where you can believe yourself as a very respectable achievement. So pride is like a personal interest, how you feel for most of the people who are playing for their own country, for example, in Olympic. That's a pride, because not most of the citizens of any country are able to play, or even they want to, it's tough to get into that level of performance. And that's a very field file. If we go to the cricket example, I will say before the T20, where this professional cricket take place. They also call it franchise cricket. Before that, the only option we had is to play for your own country. And there used to be carry a pride. If I have to be specific, West Indies is a combination of many islands and many countries to make a one team. So anyone coming from any island, and when they represent the West Indies, it becomes the pride, the honor, the respect they receive.
Okay, Coach. So is there such a thing as a specific or a common sign that may indicate that a player has too much pride or an insufficient amount of pride?
Simplest way to say pride has a more close connection or attachment with the patriotic nature. Means you are playing for your country, you are doing for your country. That includes the military men, servicemen who serve the country. These are the prides. So in that sense, we can easily say pride is a different kinds of honor. It depends how you feel. But when it comes to the sports, I usually put them in two categories for all players. And that is nowadays a common point or widely discussion everywhere, where the player is playing for money, means for the prize, where the players used to play for the country, that's a pride.
Let me relay a little anecdote to you and then a question at the end. Coach, I remember a period when test match was the only format of cricket and the West Indies had a quartet of destructive pace bowlers. In one test match between England and the West Indies, a time without helmet and face shield, that was a time before these became popular, England's Brian Close stood up to the fire of the West Indies by simply standing his ground and moving his head forward and backwards. Now, the next day, a photograph of his upper body showed the result of many direct hits on his body. So, Brian Close, he neither flinched nor complained. Yes, he had got there. Had to be more to it. So my question for you is, was pride an element in this situation? Was pride a motivation for Brian Close to stand up to the West Indies?
Definitely. That's a unique situation. No doubt it's a toughest. It's a riskier. Not safe, but even though the honor being in the game on that given day against the West Indian pace bowlers, it's a huge pride. It's a standout, just like you mentioned today. Hundreds of players has played test cricket for England, but he just named one because of that specific incident. And that is where the test cricket used to be, playing for the country, and you stand out and do something in honor or respect of the country. That used to be a huge milestone and achievement for anyone. And that's when you say test cricket, it wasn't involved for money. It was used to be a compensation, but not that big enough. And the people used to take that as a profession. And even on those days, they used to put a lot of work and dedication behind it. It means year around, they used to keep them fit. They used to keep them trained. And on, even they don't have too many test matches year around, they used to maintain so they can compete at international level. And so if it's anyone, if you look at the population, for example, India, it's a huge population, but only 11 can take the field. So whoever is the taking the field is believes that this is the highest pride I can take while playing cricket.
Thank you, Coach. Leon, do you listen?
Coach, when you talk about pride and price, it brings me back to Saville. When he was given an open check to go to South Africa, and he refused. And another instance is once playing for the West Indies in Australia, his hat fell, his cap fell off of his head. And he just picked it up and dusted it off. He's not one to wear a helmet. Can you give us a little idea as what are your thoughts on those two instances that I've quoted?
Number one, during those days, pride was bigger than prize. As I explained, pride can be different things, various factors. You can list them as a pride, but the biggest thing is the pride is comes with your image. The image, when we say individual image, your personal image, it can be portrayed in terms of reputation you achieved for doing something and respect you are getting from others for that achievement. And that's combined into an image, and that's we call it a pride. So during those days, playing for the country and playing in international format or standard was the biggest achievement anyone can have it, because at that time there was absolutely no alternatives, no competitions, or there are not many choices were there. And even though you just mentioned this one, the South Africa used to offer a money to visit. The good compensation you don't make elsewhere, even you don't make playing for the country. And they used to offer. Some took it, some did not. But it's a very difficult to say, is it a pride to play in a such a way, especially playing in South Africa those days? I will say there is a two side when this happened. Some of the players did play it, and even today, there is a talk. There is a positive talk. People talk like they did not play for country, but they played for the money, and they went there. And some people say, well, that's a rebel, right? That's some labels it. So there's a good and bad thing, but at the same time, you also hear some comments from the legends and some people who care about humanity and a lot of other side things. And that is where this pride comes. Some took it, some did not. But overall, the biggest pride you can achieve in a sport is not your individual decision, is not your individual achievement. What you do it for your team, what you do it for your national team, and how the fans respond, that is the biggest thing. Going on the cap, it's a patriotic way, I will say. For me, it's India. If I'm wearing the cap of India, I don't want to have dirt on it, period. If it is falling off my head, I highly respect the logo which I am wearing. So that's, sir, views that statement about that cap falling off and dusting out. I would say that's a respect he is giving to the country because he is playing for that cap, which is the West Indies. It's a huge pride, and that is what today's youngsters has to learn and understand. When you put the cap of your national team, it's a huge pride. First, you have to think about you are fortunate to have your position in the team where many trying to or many don't have it, that option. Number two, with the today's media and coverage they're getting worldwide, this is the one simple example exposing or exploring your interests, like how you feel about the logo you're wearing, how much you respect that logo. And even today, this cap incident is a huge in terms of the pride. It starts with the cap logo. You might have seen when the new player takes a debut in international cricket, they usually hand over the cap. It's a new cap player. It means somebody is getting a national cap to be part of the team. And that begins with the pride. It's like a beginning of your journey to reach that level. It's also a pride. And that is why this is becomes more important to carry the logo. You have to be concerned and you have to be serious about the logo you are wearing. You also have to protect and honor and respect that logo and anything comes with that attachment. And that is carry on in today's world. If you're playing for the franchise, you are wearing that franchise logo and their brand name attire, I will say. The dress comes with a lot of logos and that's a part of the game. So pride comes with that logo. And a logo is maybe a symbol to recognize someone who represents that pride.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for that, JT.
Okay. Coach, you know, players wear their pride on their sleeve such that it is always with them in their head, or is there a time to let it go?
It doesn't matter to me. We have seen days in like 70s and 80s, the cricketers' shorts and pants had never had any logo or written on it. It were plain white or cream color, the wear they used to put on. The only logo we used to see when I was a kid, I will say, is their cap. Whether it's a Panama cap or county cap, there's a two different caps we used to see in the cricket. And those are the only logo they used to had it. Now during the game, we have seen it, whether it's a bowler, fielder, sometimes the batters against the spinners, they take off their hat. Means during that moment, they absolutely have nothing on their body which has any logo. But even though it's all about spirit of the game and being a good sportsman, you have to respect that logo, whether it's on or not. So in that sense, simple answer to your question, it doesn't matter whether you have a logo on your body at any given moment during the game. You still have to respect. You have to take that pride with you all the time.
Thank you, Coach. All right. Now, legendary West Indian players coached such as Worrell, Walcott, and Weeks are often remembered as players who gave all for pride of country. However, current crop of West Indian players seems to be fixated on the prize above country. Is this a fair statement or am I being judgmental?
It's definitely more than we can compare or think about it. Anyone thinking about these three W's, we call it, from Barbados, I will say that's a huge respect we have to give it to them. And in my opinion, whatever they have done it, that's the highest pride anyone can have it in their life. Anyone can have it in their family. Anyone can have that sort of pride in coming years during their next generation within their family. To me, I will say the 3W also owns a currency. When people use that currency in Barbados, they have option to have 3Ws on the bill. And that's a huge. And that is the reason I will say, look at the honor they received. And that's a huge pride. Most of them don't have it. There are a handful of cricketers in West Indies being rewarded with sort of that recognition where the government or the rulers are taking their identity, picture, autograph, or name into a currency. It's a huge honor. I will say, I think as Viv Richards has it in Antigua, 3Ws in Barbados. I'm not sure what other currencies are running in the Caribbean countries, but this is the highest honor you can take, and that's a huge pride for anyone. If anyone out there who thinks about who were 3Ws, what they have done it, I think you need to start scratching your head and think about it, who you are today, what you can do for West Indies. And even you do something, think the outcome, the effectiveness, where you could be, how you'll be recognized. Playing cricket, there is a fan base, there is a government involvement, and there is also International Cricket Council is involved, who normally recognize players based on their contribution, not just representation. And that is the huge pride for 3Ws.
What about the second part of that question, Coach? I mean, am I being judgmental if I say the current crop of West Indies players are fixated on the prize money above country?
That's been a kind of issue. We have seen many incidents that some of the players are not willing to take West Indies pride to play, but at the same time, they are going abroad to play some franchise cricket. And the franchise cricket is a sort of form where they are getting paid more than what they get in the country pride, right? The country teams means the national team offers you a contract for a term. You need to be a contracted player. And it takes a lot of commitment, where this franchise cricket is most likely a tournament long or a season long, but it's not a year-round contract. The beauty of today's world is a lot of new generation bending towards playing professional cricket because you have many options available. You can play year-round in a different franchise. That's another option they have. So because so many things are happening, for the today's generation, it's all about option based on the alternatives they have. Are they taking a pride to play for national team? Or they are more concerned about the prize, what they're getting out of playing this situation. And in West Indies, I will say there is a both ways, but the majority of the flow in today's world is going towards playing for the franchise.
But I don't want to step in an hornet's nest here, but in follow up with the, does the offer of a prize allow current West Indian players to have an overinflated estimation of their self-worth?
Well, it's a two-sided street, I call it. Player can label, put their own price, what they want to get, or what is the bare minimum they like to have it to be part of any team. But at the same time, there's another way, what the franchise wants to pay you. Because most of the major franchise tournaments around the world are restricted their teams based on the budget. Means every team in a tournament or league or competition has a certain amount of budget, and they have to build that team within their budget. Some may be getting overpriced, some may be getting underpriced, and because of that, some of the players does left out. So this price factor, to me, is a flexible and variable beyond the player's control. Not only that, it's not something you are looking at a sustainable contract. Means, we have seen in last 5 years after the corona, I will say, to be specific, we have seen many players getting opportunity in some of the big tournaments worldwide. And after that one participation, means a 1 year involvement, we don't see this player going again in the same tournament next year. Now, this thing is like involved for that prize. Because when you play for the prize, the franchise owner is looking for a performance, the return. So prize is coming with some sort of commitment and expectation. And when they don't perform, the prize can be nil very soon. You may not have another opportunity. And that's a huge setback, because if you fall off, let's say, for example, IPL, you will not have a second chance from any other team. And not only that, when you take that sort of reputation, like you made it 1 year with good amount of money, did not make it second year, it does impact your overall career. When you go to the other franchise in a different countries, this commercial cricket is watching your progress. They are tracking you. You are on the radar to see how much you're worth, what you have done so far, what you're doing, and sometimes the biggest impact, what you are capable of. So this prize is always a huge concern. And this next generation has to consider pride over a prize. Playing for West Indies is not much up and down. As long as you perform, you can be a part of the team in a longer term. Whereas franchise is limited to what you can perform.
Thank you, Coach. Leon, I see you're back. Any questions on this?
Yeah, I had a question, but we have been joined by Audley and by Virgil. I don't know if Audley is in with the conversation and he wants to ask a question. Audley, are you?
No, I don't want to. No, I'm just in. I'll come back later. I don't have a question. Just joined.
No, of course. Virgil, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, but I can't ask no question. I'm eating a fish head, so I can't ask no question.
Okay, but my question, though, Dennis, to Coach, yes, is the fact that these players, or some players on the West Indies, used to at least get in conflict with the West Indies because they were not allowed to go to Pakistan without the NOC. But now the West Indies would have have an open window that players who are selected are given, but if they are called back, of course, they have to relinquish that and come back home. But would you call these people playing from pride or for money?
Well, there is a simple equation in today's world.
Mm-hmm.
People can dump the pride for a prize. Remember this word.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see that many people who can dump the prize for a pride. We don't see that. Let's say one example in ongoing situation in West Indies for last 3-4 years, I will say. West Indies is trying to go behind a franchise players who has a less interest to play for West Indies, but they prefer to play franchise cricket only. But whenever the major event comes at international level, especially World Cup, Champions Trophy, West Indies is going behind those players to convince them. So there is a momentum of the players where they are going for just prize only. Pride worth nothing. And we cannot blame just West Indies. It's an overall problem in the entire professional world of sport. If you go back in early 90s, I'm giving you this one example, when the NBA players declined to play for the USA, and they sent the team from the college, and they were beat by Russia and many other countries, and all of a sudden, the people at the Olympic level convinced these NBA superstars that the money you make, the royalty or reputation you carry, worth nothing unless you do something at the international level and when you represent the USA. And winning the gold in the Olympic is a much more pride over any prize. And that is the one I'm talking, the one of the best example between pride and prize is our USA dream team in Olympic.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at that roster, I will say these all legends belong to top of the world in their own category, whether it's a center, whether it's a forward, whether it's a short jumper. If you look at any position, these are the stars who can make millions. But the point came out at one place is not what they are, what the records they have, what career they have so far, what the money they make. It was a pride to play for the USA, and they did it. One of the best performances you can see in a basketball world, it was provided by the Dream Team. And this is ongoing. Even we did it that, even that was happened in 90s, even today if you look at it, a lot of superstars who are making good money, has a big reputation, big celebrities, they normally do not prefer to play for Olympics. So this is the ongoing situation worldwide, not just cricket. But unfortunately, cricket in West Indies, I believe, suffering more than anybody else when it comes to the pride and prize, when the some of the players are not willing to do the fair business for the fans, let's say. We normally, sports is all about what? The fans. And if the fans are not happy, if the things are not going well as the fan thinks or expects, then we are losing fans. And that is the where, in my opinion, player has to understand, it's not about you. It's not about what you can do for the team or organization or team. It's not about what record you carry. Your biggest pride is always how many fans you have who appreciate your effort. That is the biggest thing.
Just let me follow up one a little bit here, Dennis. The coach, what will happen to a player if he break ranks and go and play for a franchise team and reject an India contract?
It never happened and it will never happen either. Because West Indies and the cricket is completely different when it comes to the protocol and procedures in granting these NOCs for the player, where the India does not allow that to go elsewhere and play. Number two, I think they are getting paid more than any other country, so they are not looking for money to going somewhere. It's a simple example. Look at this, the success of the IPL. Have you ever seen any Indian active or the current or young IPL player going abroad and play? Not even county cricket, not even any other franchise. They all want to play in India, for India, and just IPL. That's it. Anything else is not much interest to anybody.
I have a strong belief, though, that they may be coming to the USA.
Mr. Francis, hold on. Let me object 1 minute. I don't believe that part there. Don't tell me that India players don't want to go nowhere else in the world and play. Any country in the world, I don't care how much money you're getting, just like if Michael Jordan getting all the money in the world, and there's some, and he wants to go somewhere else just because he wants to play somewhere else. They guys will do that. If you tell me that the India cricket board do not want their players to go anywhere because some of these players not even playing in the IPL and some of them is good enough to go, they're not playing in the IPL and they're not playing for India, and they would have glad to go somewhere else and play because when people go somewhere, they feel a lot better, get a lot of communication with other people. But for said that these players make enough money that they don't want to go anywhere else in the world, I don't believe that for nobody whatsoever.
Okay.
It's not about the money.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you
100%. In other people's competition.
That's why I made the statement, find me a current active player who thinks like, hey, I better play somewhere else. People who left out of IPL, people who retired from the IPL, people who worth nothing with the IPL, they can go anywhere. There's a plenty of opportunities out there, and that is what you're looking at. But
yeah,
finding
it's,
a wonderful player...
It's not all about the money, yeah? Everything is all about the money with
Virgil,
some of these players, though.
Virgil, thank you. Let the coach reply.
So, no, that's right. No, he has a good point. And again, when the player don't have opportunity, when the player don't have any chances, they definitely will go out. And that is what you're going to expect in Canada, USA, and many other countries. Nothing new about it. But the people who are playing well, the people who are doing great, people who are making enough, I believe they are happy. They don't play anywhere else. And it's a part of the system. Let me tell you one thing. While these people are talking about India player don't want to go out, whatever it is, if you feel that BCCI is controlling, IPL is clamping down, absolutely, they are the boss. Just like you work for any company, if they are paying for you, what is the freedom and option you have? Unless you quit that job and find something else.
Mm-hmm. All right, Coach, before we wrap up, let me ask out there if one of the ladies might have any questions for Coach before I... Donna, any questions for the coach? Mertris, any questions? All right. Mertris, any question for the coach?
No.
All right, thank you. Coach, let me wrap up by asking you this final question. West Indian players' development came via local development, local clubs, their coaching, their training, their match competition. Should local clubs have an expectation of compensation from the prize rewarded given to players?
Yes. And that is where India is outstanding. Even at the local level, if you look at this local competition, even their first-class cricket is playing more to the players than many other countries. And that's a huge incentive. Not only that, it creates the competition because the many players want to be part of that system because the compensation is good, pride is good, opportunities are there. So I think that is the big question for the West Indies from the grassroots level to going up to the top. It's a one stage it comes, usually the maturity age. I usually discuss this point heavily when anyone turns 19. So this 19 to 26, there's a 7 good years is the where they are looking for a good platform. When we say good platform, is not about playing or opportunity or chances, but the same time where they can see their future, where can they build the career, and it only can happen if there is a good compensation is coming out of those participating in it. So this regional competition in West Indies can be a first step towards strengthening player situation is how much compensation they are getting. It needs to be not just streamlined. It needs to be done really carefully. And it's not just West Indies. To be honest with you, maybe it's the USA, Canada, and many associate countries are going similar challenges. If someone wants to make a cricket career, they need to have some sort of compensation where they feel like I better play cricket and enjoy this game because I like it compared to I work somewhere else and make some money. Means if someone is doing some ordinary job as a full-time employee, you must have that sort of money coming out of cricket. So the person don't have to work, don't have to look for bread and butter for himself or his family and stay with it. So this compensation part is becoming a really critical agenda. And because of that, many youngsters are falling away from the cricket for a reason.
So, thank you, Coach. We are at the end of our segment of the Coach's Corner. We want to thank you for your insights, your knowledge and experience. And we invite you to join us again next week at the same time right here on the call. There is no doubt that Coach Patel have answers to the questions you've been asking. The question that says, how did he do that, or why did he do that? Maybe you will say, I am going to do that next time. Thank you once again, Coach, and we look forward to your joining us again shortly.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Coach. Dennis? Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. I just want to remind our listeners and our panelists that we are hoping to hear from Dr. Dawn.
Dawn Marie Armstrong.
Yes, indeed. I just got paused there for cause. And, of course, Audley, why don't you come in and give us your inside edge before we go to our special topic?
Okay, so the inside edge for today, just like last week, I gave you the men on the men's side, the amount of century that is made on debut by cricket where that is. This evening with the ladies. So the first test match, ladies test match was played almost 90 years ago, 34-35 series with England and Australia. And the first test was played back there. But the first person, the first lady to make a century on debut, her name was U.L. Pasilik. And she's an Australian. She made 108, and that was versus New Zealand. That's in 1948. That was test number 8. We know that the ladies don't play a lot of tests like the men. So that was the 8th test that was being played. She made a century on debut, 108 versus New Zealand. And the highest score. score, the highest score on debut by a female cricketer, 204. And that was by M.A.J. Cosco. And that was an that's also an Australian woman. And that was in 2001. And that was versus England, 204, the highest on debut by a female cricketer.
So could you repeat the name again?
Look at if it,
repeat the two names again.
Hassily. UL, just the two initial names. UL Pasley and Cosgo, M-A-J Cosgo. That's spelled G-O-S-Z-H-O, Cosgo. Yeah, so she's the highest on debut and the other one, the first lady to score a century on debut. And if you take a look at the top, she's also an Australian. So Australia is sitting on top of the roof because the first male to make a 100 and debut is a fourth, Charles Bannerman, in the very first test match that was played, 165, retired hurt out of 245. Also still the highest of run score in one innings by a single individual. So there we go, the inside edge.
And there you have it from Audley, folks.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Okay, with the sound in the background there, the happy birthday song. We know it's time for the Walter Henry birthday and anniversary hour. It's time of the evening when we take a look in the cricketing fraternity, and we say happy birthday, happy anniversary, as the case may be. And it's your time to call in, 515-605-9850. So as I go along, an occasional footnote. So here we go. Today, the 21st of April, and just outside cricket here, give you a couple. Joe McCarthy was born way back in 1871. He's an American Hall of Famer basketball manager. Some 7 World Championship, as they call it, World Championship, 7 between Chicago, New York Yankees, and the Red Sox. Also, we all should remember this actor, Anthony Quinn. Anthony Quinn, yeah, Lawrence of Arabia, yeah, Mexican American. He died 2015. He was born 1915. And of course, Queen Elizabeth II. She was born 1926. She left us roughly 2 years ago. Yeah, 2022. She made her exit from this side. Tony Danza. We should remember Tony Danza from Taxi. He was a boxer, former boxer, and turned actor. And we would remember him from Who's the Boss? Yeah, Tony Danza. Today he turned 73 years old. And James McAvoy from the X-Men. Today he's 45. Okay, let's go to some cricket. Just before the cricket, my very good friend, a little friend here up in Boynton Beach, Manny is celebrating his 28th birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Manny. Okay, so John Goddard from Barbados, Sean Kavanagh from Ireland, Alan Watkins, Fire Kemp, and Wendy Williams from England. We have Shaziz Ahmed from the Netherlands, Shiba Ahmed from Pakistan. We have Venkataragavan out of India. Remember, he was part of one quartet of the famous 25% of the famous Indian quartet. Betty Prasanna and Chandrasekhar. Yep, he was one of those. Today, who, yep, Venkat celebrates his birthday. Radhav Yadav, female cricketer out of India also. Gordon Drummond from Scotland. Nadeem Chaudhary from Bangladesh. And Demot Kulkarni from Sri Lanka. We have Fasina Douglas, the niece of Donna up there in New Jersey. She'll be celebrating tomorrow. And Jetna and her husband will be celebrating a wedding anniversary also tomorrow. Jetna and her husband, wedding anniversary. Okay, coming up. So Ken Palmer, Tim Love, Daniel Wyatt, and Jonathan Trott from England. Terrence Wimble from South Africa. George Alexander, June James, Joe Angel, all from Australia. Sundaran Ravi out of India. Angel Jones from Ireland. Ashraf Ali from Pakistan. And we have Ratan Mandugala from Sri Lanka. Steve Duane and Finn Allen from New Zealand. And we have Aftab Ahmed and Jonathan Malcolm out of Denmark. For the 23rd of April, famous playwright Mr. William Shakespeare. Everybody knows Shakespeare. I talk about Shakespeare. Wrestler John Cena. We have comedian George Lopez. Also, actor Ken Penn, comedian John Oliver, Shirley Temple, little Shirley Temple. She died 2004, Shirley Temple, remember her. And the $6 Million Man, Lee Majors, was born back in 1939. Also, Philip, Michael Moore, remember Michael Moore, Fahrenheit 9/11, Michael Moore, that one. Okay, so William Solomon, Claude Carter from South Africa, Graham Mango, and Barry Shepherd from Australia, John Diarchy and Luke Ranchick from New Zealand, and we have Mohammed Kozai from Pakistan, Alice Farrakhan from Bangladesh, we have J.P. Kosu from the Netherlands, from Namibia rather, Pinkney de France also from Namibia. Hayden Walsh Jr. will be celebrating. Remember that one. Hayden Walsh Jr. will be celebrating on the 23rd. And it's also the anniversary of Brian Lara making his maiden test century. And that was after some 19 innings. He made 122 net out against Australia. Okay, so we have Jason's daughter will be celebrating her birthday. Charming. She'll be celebrating, and of course, when you hear her birthday, you know it's the birthday of Sachin Tendulkar. Yes. Virgil's brother also, Michael, will be celebrating also on the 24th. So Virgil, remember Michael, the 24th. And so we go to Jack Hobbs, Jeff Homepage, and David Larter from England. Sachin Tendulkar, MSK Prasad, and Venkatarana, all from India. We have Mengistu Mosale from South Africa. We have Damian Fleming from New Zealand, Mary Pat Moore out of Ireland, and Sakanda Raja from Zimbabwe. Pray for Zimbabwe, but she was born in Pakistan. So we have for the 25th, Leon's grandson, Adrian, yes. Akil Morris. Yes, Adrian Akil Morris will be celebrating on the 25th. And Leon will elaborate on that one a little more. And Omar McLeod, out of Jamaican athlete, 110 meters hurdle, former world and Olympic champion. So back to cricket, Fred Price, Mike Selby, Monty Panesar, Joe Chamberlain, and C.B. Fry, all from England. Bruce Martin, Zimbabwe. Neon Pascal out of West Indies, Grenada. Roy Marshall from Barbados. And Akil Hussein from Trinidad and Tobago, 25th. Gary Kotsia from South Africa. Jamie Sedum
from Australia. Sanjita Rangatunga from Sri Lanka. Burke Jackson from Zimbabwe. And Garth Tingarth of Ireland. For the 26th, we have former First Lady Melania Trump. She'll be celebrating on the 26th. Jet Li. Wow, wow, wow. Kung Fu fighter, Jet Li. He was born in 1963. And cricket commentator, sports commentator, Vinod Momson. He'll be celebrating also on the 26th. West Indies, forget his title. No, I don't know if he's not direct up here, but Johnny Graves. Let me see Johnny Graves. Somebody will take me in. Johnny Audrey, Graves also. Yes.
Do me a favor. Yes. I would like to speak with you off air a little bit because we have a special interruption to do. Okay, so if you wouldn't mind, just let me just say this. Oh, go ahead, Dennis,
Okay.
I do this.
Okay.
Dr. Dawn, are you hearing me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, first off, let me give you my apologies. It's because we're working with different time zone and my calculations got it wrong.
That's okay.
We will try to get things moving as of this moment, if you are
ready.
Yeah,
that's all right. Yeah, so no, that's fine. As stated, I think we had a bit of back and forth about the time zones, given, my location, the location of some listeners back in the Caribbean. So hopefully those that have joined haven't joined too early or too late. But no, I'm happy to be introduced at this point because I was listening very keenly to the end of the dialogue, more so when the coach that was speaking about pride and different things. Yeah. So I'll let you give your introduction, and then I'll jump straight into that.
Okay.
Go right ahead, Dennis.
So, good afternoon to our listeners and friends of the Cricket Show. Tonight, or this moment, we are very happy to welcome Dr. Dawn Marie Armstrong. She's a research and teaching fellow at Loughborough University in England. And Dr. Armstrong is also the founder and principal psychologist of Afro Sports Psych. She is also the author of two very important letters to the Caribbean community. First, A Cricket Player Deserves, and second, Lack of Compensation for Local Cricket Players is a Regional Problem. Dr. Dawn, after speaking with representatives across the Caribbean region on the issues of lack of payment to cricketers at the local club level, what was your final conclusion?
My final conclusion was that, as I stated in the letter, that it is now unanimously known that local cricket players across the Caribbean are not paid. And I think what prompted this investigation for me, it was something that I found to be quite interesting. It was a comment that was made, I would say, perhaps about 2 months ago. I don't know if you have ever heard of the BIM 10 tournament. This is a tournament that's played in Barbados, hosted by a Dream 11 and, a few entities in the Caribbean that have decided to scale down the T20 cricket and make it, I guess, a quicker version. And as a result of that, there are some of these tournaments played around the Caribbean. Nonetheless, Barbados hosted their version in December, and players were being compensated $120 Barbados per game, which obviously was unprecedented given the fact that cricket players at the local level in Barbados are not paid. All right. So the tournament was played. It was a successful tournament. Players were compensated. It was broadcasted on YouTube. I felt like it was a step in the right direction with respect to cricket development in our country. However, 2 months ago, people started to make fun at the fact that players were being compensated. They were saying, $120 isn't any money. Why are players playing for this amount of money? It's not enough. And interestingly enough, some person was being facetious. And there was an interview with some top officials from the Barbados Cricket Association And this social media blogger, let's call him a cricket enthusiast, who thought to ask the now cricket operations and development manager of the BCA, a Mr. Wendell Coppin, decided to ask him about his thoughts about players receiving $120 Barbados to play. And the response that Mr. Coppin gave was what created the alarm for me, in the sense that I thought, I think he said something to the effect of, you know, no one could get me to go in a draft for $120 Barbados. And I thought, well, that's a strange thing to say, you know, as a development manager, recognizing again the globalization of the sport. Your colleague that spoke earlier spoke about, obviously, the incentivization and players being retained in India for those purposes, and recognizing that players in India are very well paid, just as players in Australia, just as players in England, even at what they call the domestic level. So when I heard the comments made by Mr. Coppin, I thought, well, this is alarming. So then I started to think to myself, well, he wouldn't go in a draft for $120, but I know back in his day they received nothing. So I thought, why put the players down for going into the draft for $120, well knowing that when the Barbados Cricket Association's tournament is being played, as it is being played now and will continue to play until the end of 2024, players receive $0. So then I thought something must be wrong with what was said, and I started to ponder on it, started doing my research, thinking to myself, you know, even in saying that to the players who are already underappreciated, to try to make them feel badly for accepting payment for a sport that they love, for a sport that really and truthfully, when you consider it outside of the Caribbean, is quite lucrative. I thought this must be something that I could get onto in terms of trying to understand why Mr. Coppin would have made the comments that he made. Obviously, at the point in time, my response to it was very much, you know, I did scold them and I said, well, this is shameful given the fact that the BCA doesn't compensate players. And what the BCA should really be doing at the point in time is developing a system for compensation. And this was a system that I suggested almost a decade ago. Obviously, I have not taken into account, you know, inflation, the rising cost of living. But the reality is that you can no longer look at a cricket player anywhere in the world and expect them to continue to play cricket for fun. And it is something that caused me to even think deeper about the issue that we have. Why are players being made to play cricket for fun, well knowing the incentives that are out there, and even now how it is weaponized in the Caribbean when it comes to players deciding, okay, well, yes, this is money in the Caribbean, and yes, this is an okay amount, but there is more money to be made. Why are we using money as a weapon to stop our players from advancing to seek bigger and better opportunities outside of the Caribbean when there is none? So fundamentally, what is happening in the West Indies and what they don't want to accept, and if you read the letter that was published in The Guardian specifically, what we are leaning towards is a component of internalized oppression, right? So as the coach would have rightfully hinted to, this element of he kept saying pride and pride and pride and people should be proud. And in reality, that's all former cricketers received. That's all they had. You know, they just had pride. So Gary Sobers, pride. Joe Garner, pride. You know, pride, pride, pride. And now, in 2024, these gentlemen are now starting to kind of reap the rewards of what they did in establishing West Indies cricket, what they did in beating the colonizers at this sport, what they did in dominating this sport for the decades before. And now they're getting the rewards, right? So I definitely feel when we consider internalized oppression, and this is a form of like social justice theory, so this is rooted in the sociology, whereas my work kind of combines the sociological component and the psychological component. It is this belief, it is a form of discrimination that occurs, and it is this belief, whereas because we have been oppressed as Black people and because Black cricketers have been oppressed, they start to internalize these beliefs about themselves and, you know, about the fact that you know, maybe cricketers don't deserve to be paid, or we weren't paid, so, you know, no one else deserves compensation. And in reality, it is this case where, you know, former players who haven't been compensated, who then come into administrative roles, find it difficult to compensate players of this day and age for their mm-hmm. skills and their talent. And they find it difficult to give them permission to work and to earn and to look for money. And this is why players who decide, well, I am moving away from this West Indian system of cricket and seeking my opportunities abroad, are often made up to be problematic, selfish, not caring about country, not being pride, not having any pride, or they just want money, they're money hungry. When in reality, who doesn't want money? Who doesn't want to live? Who doesn't want to survive? So when we consider the internalized depression and, you know, the few of the persons on it, it's funny because I've had discussions with people that have read my letters from other parts of the world and players who have gone to other parts of the world to seek opportunities. And we liken, you know, the box at Kensington Oval in the 3Ws stand. Everyone goes to have a drink and to talk and, you know, they're in the box and they're looking down at the players who, you know, may not have had the opportunity to, or probably will never have the opportunity to experience what they are currently experiencing. And it is this system of, you know, I'm better than you, here I am, you're there. But the minute that these players are getting compensated, I definitely feel that they will feel that the power kind of structure will be offset to the point where players would know feel empowered and feel liberated and feel as if they're being compensated for their hard work. So when we consider the internalized oppression, we have to consider the fact that there is an element of an inferiority complex. You know, other players, older players were made to feel small. They were made to feel as if they're unworthy. They were made to feel as if they weren't gentlemen. So, you know, all you could do is swing a bat or a ball. You know, that's all you are. They were made to feel as if they can be nothing more than cricket players. And therefore, these group of administrators who have their ties to what one would call colonialistic, I think in my mind, when we think about the colonial element of cricket, those with that mindset, when they come to lead in cricket of the present day, they come with a heap of oppression to project onto the players to stop the development of players. Equally, I was about to say, when we consider, this element of, and I had a response to it, you know, if my suggestions were to be accepted, it would signal the end of domestic cricket. And I thought, how bizarre for some person who was once a cricket operations manager at the said Barbados Cricket Association. How strange was it for them to come and say, oh, it would signal the demise of cricket, when truthfully what it would do is show that we are ready to take our cricket forward. So I just thought, when we consider the psyche of administrators in the Caribbean, when we consider the fact that these are people sharing these views in 2024, literally holding on to the fact that men and women should not be compensated for their skills and talent, just as it would be for me as a degree person, for persons with their coaching qualifications who should be compensated, for persons, you know, with their skills and their trades to be compensated. When a player picks up a bat, when a player picks up a ball, and they move their body, and they perform, and people cheer, and people are happy, and they're well-known, and, you know, they uplift the sport, of course they should be paid. There would be no Barbados cricket team without their local players. And there would be no cricket West Indies team without the local cricketers across the Caribbean. And I think that the administrators of CWI, by actually not engaging players in discourse about compensation and about payment, are engaging territorial bodies about payment and compensation, what we are doing is actually hindering the development of our cricket across the Caribbean. And we know that our issues are not just performance-wise, but we know equally that our issues are psychological. And unless we begin to tackle these psychological issues, I'm afraid that our cricket will not be moving forward anytime soon.
Oh, very well said. Thank you so much. Well, let me follow up by asking you, In one of your letters, you spoke of the globalization and incentivization of our, quote-unquote, our game.
Yeah.
Can you explain what you meant by this statement?
Yeah, so essentially cricket was our game. We won the first World Cup. We were known to be, you know, we were the it boys back then of cricket. And everyone identifies people from the Caribbean with cricket. Yes, we've seen the rise of Jamaican sprinting. And oftentimes, you know, as a Barbadian, I'm in the UK and I'm navigating certain spaces. Predominantly sporting spaces. And when you mention that you're from the Caribbean, Barbados specifically, they ask you about cricket. What's happening with the West Indies cricket team? You know, and all you could do at some point in time is say, oh, you know, well, tough luck here, tough luck there. So when I say our game, it's the fact that we dominated. We have made cricket what it is today. We have. And essentially, people have taken it from us, incentivized it, made it more global in the likes of the IPL, in the likes of the Big Bash, in the likes of all of the other leagues across the world that pay large sums of money to obviously have our talent, because our boys are dominating in these leagues regardless, right? So when I say that it has been incentivized by others, and asking the questions about it still being our game, how could people take our talent from us? How could they take the way that we play, profit off of it, and we are still sitting in the shadows waiting for opportunities and pointing fingers at every player that decides that they want money? Why?
I appreciate that. Let me open it up to some of our other panelists. Leon, any questions for Dr.
Indeed. Dr. Maria, really and truly thank you for coming on. My name is Leon Francis, and I just want to ask you a couple questions. Do you see more ladies going into management of cricket and perhaps one day be the president of West Indies Cricket Board or the English Cricket Board? And thirdly, the cricket symposium that was due to be held, I think it's in Trinidad, but it's going to be chaired by Dr. Rowley. You think this is a conference that will be addressing some of the issues that you're writing about?
To be perfectly honest, this is the first time that I am hearing about this symposium. And to be fair, since I have started writing my letters, I've been hearing that there's a lot of buzz now going on again, because when the microscope is now placed on the Caribbean, because it's not just persons in the Caribbean that are reading my letters. It's persons within the UK, persons within the UK are sharing with persons in other cricketing regions. And it's now actually causing people to think a lot about, yes, we understand that the West Indies cricket team is underperforming, but what are some of the real issues? And the reason why, and it is interesting, because not only did Mr. Coffin's comments resonate with me, but when the commentary for the Australian cricket tour was going on, I remember I wrote an open letter, I shared it online, it was to the CEO of the ICC, I copied it to the CEO at large, and I was calling for them to change the laws of the spirit of cricket to incorporate commentary, because I found the commentary, especially in the game at the Gabba, to be verily racially driven, specifically when they were speaking about the players and speaking about cricket academies in the Caribbean, and, you know, are there cricket academies, police academies I know about, but no cricket academies. And I thought, this is kind of microaggressive, to be fair, and this should not really be said on television. And I really thought at that point in time that perhaps some person from CWA would have spoken up and said, you know, maybe wrote a letter or two to say, well, you know, our players do watch you know, these games. And I think it was a player from Trinidad who shared the clip, and he was like, well, I can't believe that this is being said on TV. And this is what kind of caused me to think about, yes, I could understand, you know, people being critical of our cricket, but there's a limit to that critique. And equally, yes, even though what he said was racially driven, I don't think it would have been said about any other Western team. I then started to say, well, to be fair, is his comments untrue? You know, maybe we do have to look at development in the region. So when I mentioned the internalized oppression, I mentioned against administrators and players. But when we consider gender and the intersection of that, and I did highlight this in my article, when we consider race and gender and how women are oppressed typically in certain parts of the world, and when we think about it in sport, and when we think about gender equality in sport particularly, when we speak about CWI having a female CEO, you know, it was something that I think at the point in time when I first embarked on my studies as a former player and as one that represented my country and CWI at the A level, I thought whatever I do essentially will be used to influence CWI either in a leadership position, either on the board, you know, and I felt like our place is needed. But then I equally felt being in the UK and being able to take a step back and recognize that there's so many things within the organization that has to be changed in order to allow persons like myself to actually effect the change that the organizations need. I think I'm in the best position to be on the outside, helping persons to understand these are the issues that you have within your organization and these are the things that need to be changed. But to answer your question, yes, women need to be in leadership positions, not just on the board. Yes, I would love to see a female CEO. Yes, I would love to see a female, what does one say, a female president. Yes, I would love to see females heading organizations like WIPA. I would love to see females heading organizations in the territorial boards. Love to see females heading franchises. Love to see females coaching. I think it's in our parts of the world that really and truthfully, these opportunities for females seem next to nothing. So the internalized oppression, yes, administration to players, but equally when gender comes into play, absolutely problematic. And yeah, I'm definitely here to step up, and hopefully we can get things going in this regard.
Just to follow up a little bit, do you do a weekly column in any of the newspapers in the Caribbean? And do you know of the late Tim Hector and the late Tony Cozzi, of course, I believe you are familiar with
Tony Cozzi.
Yes, we have none of these writers are around these days. Are you aware of any? And do you do a weekly column in any of the papers in the Caribbean?
No, I actually don't, to be fair. And I have been asked, and I've seen that people have shared some of the recent developments with me, obviously believing that my letters have prompted some of the most recent moves by the governing body, I would say. But no, and I think for me, it is not a case where I want to engage in a weekly column because, again, in my role as a research and teaching fellow, at the end of this, and my letters will be written up until the point of the World Cup, because the purpose of the letters is to generate and to have this discourse about the psychological determinants of cricket development, participation, and performance in the Caribbean. But I think for me, I am seeking to develop a study to better understand this issue and to actually shed more light on it so that we have an evidence base to move forward and to discuss and to understand what this element of racism, and the thing is about groups that have been oppressed. And it is sad because this is the work that I do. And when athletes are racially abused, it is so hard for them to speak up. You know, people don't want to talk about it because the minute you talk about it, it's, oh, you know, forget this, forget that. This isn't happening. This is all in your head. So imagine people knowing that they've been racially abused. I remember as a girl coming up, I would, you know, be on the floor. This is when Jimmy Adams was captain. And wherever they toured Australia, you see, you know, when the West Indies players get a duck, you see a gollywog crossing the screen. And, you know, as a child then, I would turn to my mother and be like, what is that? You know, and even now as an adult, recognizing that some of those things have been sewn into our psyche. This belief that we're not good enough, this belief that we can never become better than what we are. You know, I was told, oh, when it comes to monopolizing funding, or the big three, as people would call them, India, Australia, England, oh, they have all the money, and if anything happens, this is this and this is that. And in reality, I'm thinking, but why aren't the administrators of CWI speaking up? If our issue is funding, and we're not getting enough funding, why isn't someone putting the fight to the big three, quote unquote, you know, to get more funding for cricket development in our side of the world, you know? So for me,
But Johnny Graves did make some comments, and I'm sure that was relayed to them. Do you recall that? That he did make an outcry?
I will tell you the truth. And, you know, since the publication of my second letter, I've had some dialogue with persons on the inside. And I've already said, if these things are things that are being done, it should be done publicly. There is no reason why CWI cannot update. As far as I'm concerned, all of us in the Caribbean are stakeholders, you know, whether CWI has a quarterly, whether they have a weekly publication, whether they have a broadcast, there needs to be transparency, you know, for persons to understand that things are happening, for us to understand. So people are taking offense to what I write because they're saying, oh, well, you're writing this and, you know, you're not getting the whole picture. And I said, I am doing my job. You know, I'm speaking on behalf of the athletes who are oppressed, who are, you know, being racially oppressed, who are being oppressed in pay, who are being oppressed mentally and psychologically when they're not being valued. These are the athletes that I speak to. You know, SCWI wants people to understand their perspective. Then they have to be transparent in their communication so that we know that something is being done for our players. You know, so if you can't pay local players because you don't have enough money, find the money. There are persons hired within CWI. You know, you've got financial controllers. You've got persons in positions, you know, that are meant to be there to drive the organization forward. And I've already said in some of my discussions, you know, we've got persons in Cricket West Indies employed 10, 15 years. Which organization in the world right now, sporting organization, is retaining talent for that long? 12-month contracts, you get 3-year contracts. You know, you go and you further qualify yourself. You do your CPD. You learn what is happening in the world. You update your methods. You update your skills. And you bring something back to the organization. Again, with the internalized oppression, because, you know, people have had these opportunities for so long, they're not willing to let them go for new talent to come into the organization, to bring new ideas, to take the organization forward. So it's so complex when you sit back and you consider Cricket West Indies and how archaic the system of cricket is. I'm just so surprised that we have continued for so long. And this would be, you know, ever so often. And we see it so sporadically. You know, one tournament win here, one test win here, and everyone jumps for joy because everyone loves the West Indies. But there's no continuity because when you think about the organization, everything just seems so backward and so out of place. Everything we do at this point in time, I think, is sheer luck. And I think some people would say that that's a harsh critique, but we want to see the evidence base. We want to see the professionals publishing their work. We want to see that if some person is doing something innovative, that they have the backing and the support. And, you know, there's just nothing going on in the Caribbean to show that we are up to the date and up to the times with respect to our methods. And maybe that's why we've been struggling for so long.
Thank you, Doc. Back to you.
Let's ask Audley, would you care to have any question, comment for Dr. Marie?
Okay, sorry, I was on mute. I'm here. Okay, Dr. Armstrong, I'm Audley Watson. Are you hearing me?
Yes, please, I'm here.
Okay. I'm Audley Watson, and I just want to say I agree with you 100% when it comes to a magazine. If it's not a weekly, it could be a fortnightly magazine, bringing us up to date and keeping us up to date on what is happening and what is not happening where Cricket West Indies is concerned. I have a concern when it comes to the big three. I don't think anybody wants to have a big three running the world. But when we take a look back at when we're playing especially test cricket, And when we look at those empty seats in the stands, and although magnificent cricket could have been played, you know, sometimes it's been played, and there's no support from our spectators. How I know they have administrators who are, you know, going around to try to get advertisement and, you know, involvement of other corporations. But how can we break the shackles of the big three unless the spectators are returned to the stand where we can, you know, not just depend on the television?
To be perfectly honest, and this is so interesting because this was something that I suggested when I tell you years ago, I worked for the organization as a consultant from 2016 to until 2018 when I left to write my doctorate. And I worked with the under 19 team specifically. And I remember when I started the professional doctorate, I remember thinking fan research is a thing. In other parts of the world, fan research is a thing. Why aren't we trying to understand what our fans want from Cricket West Indies? Why aren't we trying to understand why the fans aren't watching our cricket? And I remember thinking this should be, yes, it should be somewhat cross-sectional in the sense that, yes, you need a snapshot, a short-term kind of thing to base any kind of future work, any type of marketing on, but it needs to be longitudinal. We need to know why cricket fans are discontented. We need to know why they're not happy. We need to understand what it will take for them to come back to the stands. But again, no one seems to be interested in anything but driving their agenda forward. And, you know, seemingly, and when we consider this plantation mindset, you recognize that it is always, you know, people who want to be seen, you know, people who want to be known for doing something or people who want to be known for having a certain position. But they're not really thinking about the impact, the scale of the impact and how much it affects the Caribbean region. When it comes to the buy-in, I was told, and I said earlier, imagine if every citizen of the Caribbean had to give $1 to West Indies cricket. And this was said by some person, I think a few years ago. I won't say who the person was because I do not endorse or support the views of the person in this present day. And this is a current prime minister. And before they became prime minister of this country, this was their ramblings, you know, this is what needs to happen for Cricket West Indies, and this is what... And it's interesting to see that person, a prime minister, know. And that person is not even leading the charge, you know, leading the charge to have this $1 collected from every Caribbean citizen to put into Cricket West Indies. But the truth is that fans don't feel as if they own the organization. They don't feel as if there's any ownership. And that is because there's no accountability from Cricket West Indies to its fans. Yes, we are failing. We know that we are. We don't want to disappoint you. How can we move forward together? There is no more togetherness when we consider our cricket. And the truth is that it is so entwined with our identity. Is that the minute that we as Caribbean fans feel as if Cricket West Indies is doing us a disservice, we just disassociate, you know? So there needs to be an active reconnecting with the fans. There needs to be an active reconnection with the Caribbean community. And there is no better time to do it than now. At the height of the World Cup, at the height of the preparation for it, you've got these trophy tours, you've got all of this publicity. You know, now should be a time where fans should be engaged in a survey. What would you like to see from Cricket West Indies leading up to the World Cup? And you just have the survey done and people give their views and you have some of your sports scientists analyze the data and you tailor what you are doing over the next 3 months, specifically to the Caribbean region, 2 months, sorry, specifically to our region. But again, we are missing the moment. And I did offer a very strong critique and I said that the president of the organization at this point in time is so disappointing, not just because of his youth, but because he was one that I think people thought was ready to take the organization forward, but we have not seen anything of the like to push the organization in the right direction. And I think I think I've given him a failing grade in this regard. He is qualified to a PhD level. He should understand the importance of research. He should understand the importance of innovation. He should understand the importance of assessing, monitoring, and evaluating and getting things right. And nothing at this point in time seems to be going in the right direction with Cricket West Indies.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
Let me ask one more question. Let's see if Virgil has a question because I know time's going for Dr. Murray. Virgil, any questions for Dr. Don?
Yes, let me make a statement first. That prime minister he was talking about before he became prime minister, I think he just said that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just said that stuff just because he wanted to get elected. God, that's what prime minister, not the people normally do when they run into for office. My other thing, you were saying, let me get the name right, Mr. Cochrane was saying that these tournament that they got in, they got in Barbados are paying $120. They should not be compensated for the game. That's what you said, right?
He basically said, and it was so sad, that no one could get him to go in the draft for $120, essentially saying that the players should have been paid more money. But mind you, the Barbados Cricket Association, as I would have rightly said in my first letter, just received 11 million Barbados dollars. They were due 25 million. They settled for less than half, $11 million. And none of them thought, well, $120 wasn't good enough in December 2023. In April 2024, at the start of our tournament, let us pay our players double that. You know, the players went from $120 in bib 10 to nothing now in the Barbados Cricket Association League. So what I am saying is that if Mr. Copper had nothing constructive to say with respect to compensating players, and if he wasn't going to go back to the board to say, listen, these fellas were playing for $120, I don't think it's good enough, they should be getting $500. They have now gone back to receiving $0. Do you understand? So then when the BIM 10 tournament comes again this year, hopefully it comes, because I definitely feel that they're pioneering, you know, cricket development in the Caribbean, and it is up to the Barbados Cricket Association, the respective territories, and CWA to endorse the tournament and to ensure that players receive more money. It is non-negotiable. It is an independent entity. Do you understand? They're finding the money to compensate these players. And I think that this is the time for CWA and the other organizations hosting this to raise the players' fees instead of talking about what they don't and what they do deserve. So for me, I thought it was disgusting. I did say that. It was disgusting to even comment on the money that the players are accepting when the BCA is offering nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know something, when you think about you sometimes these players have to take off time. They have to buy gears. So they can't just be doing all this, continue doing all this thing for free because nobody is giving them free gears and nobody is compensating them for when they leave their job. So they should be compensated for something because in this game, the whoever organized this game making money from these games also do.
Right. Well, the organizations, the BCA gets their money. I think they should provide, they should make that public information, the amount of money that they receive. If they're not running charities. Do you understand where I'm coming from? None of them are. We're running organizations with paid employees, people running the secretariats, and I did say, F players should not be paid, and technically they're volunteers at this point in time. Can you ask the secretary in the office of the Barbados Cricket Association to volunteer until December?
No.
Can you ask any of them? Can anyone ask Vendel Coffin right now to volunteer in his role as Cricket Operations and Development Manager of the BCA until the end of the season? No way. So why should players come out and scramble to get to cricket games and to get to training to be selected and to get to trial games to see if they can make the national team? Why should they be doing it all for free in 2024?
Dr. Don, we very much
One more question quickly, Dennis. Doc, one of the questions that people are asking, what if you're going to ask for a dollar for per player, person for cricket, what of the other sports? That is the argument.
Listen to me. And, you know, when I messaged Dennis about the time, I was just making him conscious of the fact that it was quite late out here in the UK. It was never meant as, you know, for us to end the dialogue prematurely.
Okay.
But what I am saying is, no, this is going to continue. Of course, the fight is going to be fought for sport in general. Sport in the Caribbean has to become professional. But the reason why I've used cricket is because Cricket West Indies is one of the only international professional sporting organizations in the Caribbean. It is known. Yes, we can say football is global. Football is global. We know it is. We know it is, and we understand football's impact. We know the Olympics is global, and we understand the impact of the Olympics. Cricket, however, that is so entwined in our identity as Black Caribbean people, I don't think we understand its impact. You know, when the players went on the Rebel Tour, even up to now, some of those players are blacklisted, and some of those people, though, we don't talk about them. They left, and they went to they're playing the Packer Tour and the this and the that. But those people in Africa, those Black people in Africa identified with us Black people in the Caribbean. It is identity. The struggles are the same. So what we did for those players in South Africa, what we did for those people in South Africa, regardless of the apartheid, and regardless of the so-called moral justification that we had for players going to play for money, the reality is that the liberation that came from our travels from the Caribbean to Africa saw Black men playing for free amongst white men who were equals even for a moment on the cricket pitch, right? We do not understand the impact of our sport, and that is the problem that we are faced with today. You know, so when I mention cricket and I use cricket as the standard bearer, it is because everyone identifies us with it. And if cricket can start to carry the torch for compensating its players fairly and for compensating its players at the local level, then it will come for football, it will come for basketball, it will come for tennis, it will come for athletics. Somebody has to start. But equally, because of the political nature and the political construction of Cricket West Indies as an organization, this conversation should really be had by the prime ministers across the region. You know, prime ministers across the region, if it took me to be in the UK in my role as a research and teaching fellow, specifically with my research tailored towards race and racism, and understanding that and understanding those complexities, right? Every prime minister right now should be bringing a forum together to begin to discuss this, because the governments can't find the money. They find money for everything. Well, we know what Barbados government is. They find money for everything. They borrow from everywhere to get the money to do what they think they need to do and the things that they believe they should be doing. But sport now is a global priority. It is. Yep. We are missing the moment. Governments are missing the moment to get the money, to develop sport, to put our athletes on the world stage so that our athletes then feel as if, you know what, I feel as if I'm autonomous. I can chart my own path. I can pay for my nutritionist. I can pay for my psychologist. I can pay for my physio. You know, I can feed my family. I can keep a roof over my head. I don't have to tell my boss, oh, well, can I get some time off? I can actually be an athlete and be a professional athlete in the Caribbean. But again, because of the internalized oppression, governments aren't wanting to have these discussions because they don't want their people liberated. They just don't. We love control in the Caribbean. We love to know that we can say, no, you can't have that time off. You've got your 9-to-5. Why are you going playing cricket for? Cricket does pay. People love that power over people because they believe that they are shaping another person's future. And it's something that we need to let go of.
Amen.
Oh, Dr. Dawn, absolutely powerful is all I can say. I know it's 1 a.m. in the UK right now, and I'm sure we're keeping you up way past.
whatever you do, you have to bring her back if you have to travel to England.
Okay, so that was my next point. We have to hold you to an open invitation to come back and join us again and continue to open our eyes to the things of your research. Your your apartheid reference was so powerful that I must confess I had not seen or evaluated that aspect of our cricket history in the way you have opened my eyes to
definitely
see it.
And some of those legends have died and gone criminalized because they left the Caribbean region where they were getting nothing. They left to get money to support their families, and people call them greedy and they get banned. And some of them even struggled with the fact that when they came back to their countries, they were made to be criminals, you know, when in reality, people would have preferred for them to stay in the Caribbean to get nothing, you know, to then be abused and victimized. And no, we need to stop it. And where I'm definitely going to get, and sorry, I'm just so passionate about it, because I still can't believe, even though where I am, that actual, you know, that tour is still utilized to discuss, you know, the sociological impact of discrimination and apartheid. And, you know, in sports sociology literature, oh my goodness, when we consider that tour and the change it brought about for the country in South Africa, you know, we just don't understand our power.
Okay.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
I have a song to dedicate to Dr. Dawn. Dennis? Dawn?
Yes.
I can't help but dedicate this song to you. Uppercase script and then some to make sure you remain at the top of my contact list, because rest assured I'll be contacting you again to see if we can have you come back and finish the rest of the story, because you've only just given us the first chapter.
Yes, definitely. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I could have seen the doctor rocking to that song.
No. I love me some Bob Marley. We'll have to investigate the impact of his music as well. I remember working with a cricketer from Africa. Mm-hmm. And when he was struggling with the racism, and we already know how it is with sport in those other countries, what persons call the global south and how administrators are predominantly white, players are black. You know, he got in touch because he was struggling with racism, and he said listening to Bob Marley every day actually helped him to keep up the fight. You know, so we don't understand our impact in the Caribbean, and hopefully in time we will. But no, I appreciate you having me.
Yeah,
right.
it was a pleasure. Thanks.
Please
thank
come
you
back.
So much.
God bless.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, Brother Audley?
Let's see. Oh.
Yeah,
indeed, you could interrupt me anytime at all for such conversation.
All right. That's
okay,
right.
Take it away, Orly.
All right.
And let's know about Simon in the meantime because he has caught us a time when he normally don't come in. Go ahead, Orly.
Just let me finish. I'm not going to be doing it. Ivor's son on the 27th, Vaughn, will be celebrating his birthday, and Ella, Donna's sister, also will be celebrating on the 27th. And I'll end right here. And if anybody have any birthdays and want to, you know, come up, you know, announce. And as a matter of fact, let me just finish mine right here and now.
Yeah,
so a friend of mine, Jenny Perez, she'll be, if any guy, any of you gentlemen or ladies should pass by and smell anything smelling very, very good when they pass by me. This lady is responsible, Jenny Perez. She sells all those beautiful, sweet-smelling cologne, and, of course, for ladies, too. So Jenny, she'll be celebrating her birthday tomorrow. And my Florida mom, no, can only say my mom because my New York mom, my biological mom, she died. So I always say my Florida mom, Miss Barry Landison, the 23rd, she'll be celebrating her birthday, and she'll be 91 years young, 91. And while I was talking there, she called me. Of course, I took a call while the conversation was going on. So, yeah, we're still in touch. So moms, we call her mom. She'll be 91 on the 23rd. And Ben Jones up in Canada, someone who grew up together, but he was a big, much bigger guy than I am. But he'll be celebrating today. All right, so back
let's
to you,
Leon. Let's bring in Simon. Be... Simon, it's time for you to give us your birthday anniversary.
A very good evening to you, Mr. President, and all of the listeners all over the world.
Leon, the other guys to finish the birthdays then before we go to Simon because they did not get to
finish
their birthday.
No. Simon to give his birthday. His birthday.
Okay. Sorry.
Not Simon with his question, because we have just finish off the birthday. Simon, just the birthdays right now.
No, and I don't have any birthdays. Just finish off. Yeah, let him
finish. How about you, Dennis? Any birthdays?
No. Let Audley finish off. Let Audley finish off the birthdays.
How about Dennis? Not Dennis.
No.
Virgin.
I said...
A happy birthday to my brother Michael. He will be celebrating his birthday on the 24th of this month.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, love you very much and wish you all the best and many more to come. And I also want to say, I know last year we talked about George Benjamin, who celebrated his 104th birthday last year. And just last week, I was thinking about it. I was looking up to see when it was his birthday again. And I realized it was the 22nd. And then like 2 days ago, I get a call from his son and said that he passed away on Friday. So it's like 1 month and a couple of days before his 105th birthday. So I just want to tell Barris Benjamin, our condolence to you and your family and just wish you all the best.
All right. Just one minute.
Is I going anywhere?
Just about to say what's up.
No, he's not.
No, Ivor, no Donna.
Donna's here yet.
Yeah, Donna has birthday.
Donna, come on in, Donna.
Wait, hey, sister, Ella is going to be celebrating on Saturday. Also, Vaughn, whatever, which Audley mentioned already. But I have a correction for Audley. Because my niece, Kanisa, she's not tomorrow. I spoke about her last week. Her birthday was on the 16th. So please correct that.
16th, I'll be 22nd. All right, thank you.
Okay.
16th. Thank you.
Right. So correct
one
it.
16th.
16th, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So those are my birthdays for today. Happy birthday to Vaughn and Ella.
Everybody who is celebrating birthdays or any significant occasion.
Be with you somehow. I know you're in a better place. Even though I can't see your face, I know you're smiling down on me, saying everything's okay. And if I make it out of the sunlight, I'll see you again someday.
I wish.
Ever since this money comes with nothing but stress, sometimes I wish that I could just trade in my success. Y'all look at me and say, boy, you've been blessed. But y'all don't see the inside of my unhappiness. Man, I swear this shit gets heavy like a ton. That's why you hear me shooting this real shit off like a gun. I wonder how my friends would treat me now if I was nice up with a Bentley in a house. That's why fake-ass niggas get fake-ass digits and fake-ass players get real player hating them. Honey, life goes platinum and y'all ass come around.
Okay,
my shit.
Take it over.
Okay, so this has been the Walter Henry birthday and anniversary, sort of extended version. So join us next week. Once again, we do it all over, the Walter Henry birthday and anniversary hour. Back to you, Leon.
Okay, back to you, Dennis. I know you're waiting.
Well, Ivor has just joined us, so let's see if he has anything before we before we move out of there.
Okay,
Ivor.
Well, I think I have the wrong time. Didn't we change the time? Did I hear early just now at 7 o'clock?
Yes.
Yeah, we changed the time because the lady,
our guest
had to
run. Coming
so
out of the UK.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
the time
we have 8 o'clock here and I'm hearing birthday at 7 o'clock. Okay, yes. I got it. No, somebody else was there.
Okay.
So if it's your birthday, then I can say happy birthday to my son and Ella, if you're doing birthdays now at 8 o'clock.
No, we finish.
Oh, okay.
That's what
oh,
call
oh,
you in,
okay.
Ivor. You're in.
You can.
You finish. The name's the call already, right? That's a little piece, Ivor.
No, saying happy birthday to Vaughn and Adish Ella. They have birthdays on the 27th. This week they're having a birthday, so happy birthday to them. I thought I missed it, but thank you.
Yeah, this is the end of it. Okay. That's a little
piece, Ivor. Oh, I can't believe my what everybody's saying. Boy, I tell you folks, don't know the half. I give it all up just to take one ride with you. How I used to kick it on the front porch with you. How I used to lay back and smoke weed with you. And all the little basement party joints we do. Now I'm just missing you. How I wish,
Yeah, this is the birthday anniversary. Oh, Walter Henry. It's named after.
Okay,
take it away, Dennis.
All right, thank you so much. Well, much delayed, but better late than never. We are now at the portion where we ask Donna to give us the presentation, Focus on the Laws of Cricket. Donna?
Donna is silent.
Are you with us, Donna?
Hey,
I'm
Donna.
I'm muted. Sorry.
It's about time.
Yes, I'm right here. Sorry. I forgot
okay,
I was muted.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so we are about wrapping up our laws. So today we are at Law 41, Part 2. You heard Part 1 last week, so now we are into Part 2. And as usual, the goal of this segment is just to give a brief overview of the law. And we are not giving a line-by-line statement of each law. So here we go with Law 41, Part 2. And it concerns unfair play. The bowling of dangerous and short pitch deliveries is unfair, especially to the lesser skilled batters, with the balls passing repeatedly above the head of the batter. The umpire or umpires will call and signal no ball, warn the bowler, captain of the fielding side, and the other umpire. The caution to the bowler will apply throughout the inning. If the same bowler repeats the dangerous and short pitch deliveries, suspension may result in the bowler not bowling for the remainder of the match. More recently, two short pitch deliveries per over is the accepted norm. Mm-hmm. The bowling of high non-pitching deliveries, or beamers as they are called, falls in the same category of unfair, dangerous bowling. The sequences of actions by the umpire or the umpires, as previously described, will be followed. Additionally, the deliberate and willful bowling of front foot no ball is unfair. It is not clear why the bowler would undertake this unfair procedure. However, a vigilant umpire will take action that may lead to suspension of the bowler and reporting the incident to the match authority. Fielders wasting time is another unfair practice. The umpire or the umpires will warn the captain, award penalty runs to the batting side, and may suspend the bowler if this occurred during an over in progress. Time wasting does not occur exclusively on the fielding side. Batters may take excessive amounts of time to face deliveries, interrupting the bowler's run-up and other antics. The umpires will initiate the previously described sequences in use for the bowlers and the fielding side. A call of dead ball, warnings, award of penalty runs to the fielding side, and notification to the match authorities. Cricket is a game that is played on a pitch. Changing or damaging the playing areas may benefit either team. The entire pitch, but more specifically one area running the length of the pitch, identified as the protected area. All players, including the batters, must be careful to avoid always walking on or damage to the protected area. The umpires will issue warnings, admonitions, penalty runs, and if necessary, suspension if a bowler is responsible. The batter stealing a run while the bowler is running up is unfair. Unless the bowler attempts to run out the non-striker, the umpire or umpires will take the necessary action, including awarding of penalty runs and reporting to the governing authorities. Law 41 specifically lays out the rules and clearly indicates the parameters, behavior, and attitudes that will lead to an enjoyable conclusion to the game. The umpires must fully master and understand the adjudication processes. That's the end of the presentation.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mona.
Of Law 41.
Amen. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Donna.
Questions, comments? Any question, any comments? Well done, Donna.
Okay. I remember we had this conversation a few months back.
Mm-hmm.
When I myself would have said, I think it's unfair how this law is written. Because here it is, you bowl two bouncers, it goes over the head.
Yes.
They're considering that to be dangerous. And to me, it is more dangerous for a guy to bowl six balls that you have to play off your chin. And they allow you to bowl six of those. They're chin music. Because it's not going over your head, you can bowl six of those. But if you bowl two same balls to your chin, as we call beamers, you're not allowed to bowl for the rest of the inning or the rest of the match.
Mm-hmm.
So these interpretations, I mean, it's like, it is dangerous for me, to be bowling six short pitch balls that you have to ride off your chin off your face. Bouncers are useless. Like Robert said, he don't bounce to people who don't hook. So you're wasting a ball. But that is considered dangerous bowling, a ball going over your head. Two of those.
Mm-hmm.
As an umpire, I've done it in my match. The ball is just pitching up. The batsman, the ball is not really doing it. Every minute the guy is flinching and the ball is going to his head. I said, that's dangerous bowling. And I'm asking the captain to tell him, this guy actually was a tall Indian guy. And that part of the pitch, I said, the ball is going up in the guy's chest and in this thing, the guy batting at number eight, number nine. And he took him off and then bowled from the other end. I didn't wait until the ball going over. He said to say it was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So even though the law is saying this, especially over the head, I believe umpires should look at this. I mean, I know we have chest guard and headgears and stuff, but you can get killed with a headgear too. So if a ball going into your helmet,
he was not wearing a headgear. He was not wearing a headgear.
And that's what I'm saying. So the law here need to be updated but when they talk about
also,
especially over the head. About a man casting the bouncing ball to your head, 3-4 of those. That, to me, is dangerous than 2 bounces. That's my take.
It's commendable, Ivor, that you stood up and you made the comment you did to the captain. But we should also remember that the rules of the game says the umpire is the sole judge of what is fair and unfair. And in your case, you did judge that was an unfair practice. So, and you did take action. So it's a commendable, very commendable that you did this. And maybe the rules should be rewritten as you've indicated, because yes, there is, you know, we spoke earlier about Brian Close and in the days when the quartet was bowling with chin music, where the photographs was taken of his body bruised and battered. I mean, you could see the blue spots all over his body. That's exactly what it looked like. And, you know, that in itself was an indication that, you know, repeated bowling at that level and destruction and hitting of the body can be also dangerous. So commendable that you took that action, and I commend you for doing it. Yeah.
Sam, and a quick question for the panel.
Easy.
Yeah.
Just before I ask, I came on at the tail end of a young lady who was talking.
We'll talk about that later. Just give a question right now. And move
question
on.
For tonight is,
yes,
we have a test ground in Manchester, England. Could you tell me, please, the name of that test ground?
Old Trafford.
My brother lives about 10 minutes from there.
I stayed about 20 minutes from there. Old Trafford.
My brother lives about 10 minutes from there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's hear what the panelists have to say. The name of that ground in Manchester, England.
Manchester.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows.
Leon said Old Trafford, and look like everybody's saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I went there. And I also went to see Manchester United and Manchester City Stadium, man. Those things were wonderful.
Donna, we have our sister Shirley.
Anybody
Shirley
else has
in Manchester?
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, Simon. Everybody agrees.
Okay,
right?
I'm going to say Lord.
Oh, no. Lord is in London.
He just wants to turn.
No, no, no. Y'all have Virgil wrong enough. Virgil is just saying Lord as he's crying out.
Simon, quickly Simon.
To be unanimous.
Simon, quickly, Simon. How many runs can be scored for one over?
How many runs?
The maximum amount of runs can be scored for one over.
I would say 36.
And the panel agrees with him?
No, I don't.
Legally delivered balls, yes, it's 36.
Mm-hmm. We didn't say whether or not we're illegally or not. But I say how many balls in a six ball over?
Oh, you didn't say six balls.
Well, because
I can consider 10 ball, 12 ball, because if you're bowling no ball, and you can score a lot more. So
that's my point.
You have to be careful what you said. Yeah.
That's why I said legally delivered. If it was legally delivered, they can only bowl six.
Yeah, but he didn't say that first.
And he said legal.
That was unsick.
No.
So, Simon, what's your answer, Simon? Now that you hear the explanation, what's your answer?
My answer is 36.
Let Simon reveal his answer.
Why
let Simon reveal his answer to the Manchester thing.
Mr. Simon, reveal your answer for the Manchester thing because you didn't get to.
Oh, no, I said the test ground in Manchester, and I told my brother he's about 10 minutes from there. The name of it is the Old Trafford.
Yeah. Thank you.
Old Trafford.
Yes. I've been there for my birthday some 10 years ago, 7 years ago. Yeah. So England playing against Australia. Wonderful. But they're playing in 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
I couldn't stand
that. 10 degrees. Those guys. No, man. 10 degrees? I was freezing, yep. Man.
But you know, Old Trafford only came a test ground in the 80s. You know. You remember that?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's only in the 80s.
In the 80s,
yes. Before in the 60s when we were playing, there was no old Trafford. No.
It was what? It was a young Trafford at the time there?
they removed the young and the old, eh?
Well, no, okay, that ground only came to be in 1984.
Okay. So it's more like 40 years old. We're inside the Lawrence Jagero Hour from 8 o'clock. And Leon,
if you allow us, would you guys want to go about another half an hour? Because we want to cover I can't stay.
But I don't know about it.
As long as you can.
Just to mention the Lawrence Jagero Hour, and then remember we had discussion with Lawrence Jagero hearing Dennis saying he did not, you know, look at things the way that the doctor, good doctor, you know, talking about it.
That's why we named him.
I reminded that he has a name on this program.
Yeah.
And he explained the way they were lauded by the black South Africans there, because for the first time, the black South Africans look at some black people coming out of the Caribbean and place and saw them beat upon the white counterpart. They have never seen that before. So it's a lot of things that people don't look on, because the black African, the more underprivileged ones, of course, they never get a chance to see cricket. But looking at these guys coming out of the Caribbean, and not only like equal, but they were better than they are. For the first time, they're looking at the white counterpart and the receiving end of a whopping. So that's a lot of people don't talk about. And Lawrence came on this program and explained certain things. Yeah, my whole point of view had changed long time ago. Back to you.
So, Simon, ask a question about the lady. What did the lady say?
Let's move on, because we are learning things.
No, Simon, I didn't ask a question about the lady. That's what I'm saying. What was that about?
Yeah, we'll cover that later on. Because we have a lot to cover still. The lady came on early and she was speaking. But let's talk about the West Indies Four-Day Championship, folks. We ain't got enough, a lot of time. The Happy Eagles are the champions. They received $250,000. And the second place were the Windward Islands.
Simon, oh, you've muted Simon.
Oh,
oh, I see.
No, he's here. Okay, Simon wanted to hear that lady. She was a writer.
Oh,
yeah, okay. Simon?
Simon's not responding.
Mm-hmm.
Simon, God.
No, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead. We will come back to your question, Simon, but let's try and get to these now, because the West Indies for the championship. Who are the champions, Simon? Do you know? Quickly.
The West Indies championship?
For the championship. Who are the champions?
For West Indies?
Yeah, for this year. It's finished yesterday.
Well, I'll have to guess off my head. I haven't seen it, but off the top of my head, I would say Guyana.
Oh, winner. How much money did they receive as the prize winner?
Okay. No, I don't know. That I don't know. But they were doing so well, so I've just figured that they would have won.
$250,000.
Okay,
and,
okay. And I know that is just pocket change for you. That's what you walk around with in your pocket.
And the second place, the Windward Islands, they receive $100,000. Any comments, gentlemen?
Yes, and where did the Leeward Islands score?
Where did the Leeward Islands came in third place? Am I correct in saying that? Yeah, let
okay,
me get
that. That's not bad. That's not bad. Seeing that we came on the scene much later.
Please don't ask where Jamaica finishes, please. Please don't ask.
I'm waiting. Okay, and the Guyanas finished with 103.8 points. The Windward Islands finished with 98.2 points. The Leeward Islands finished with 94.0 points. That's third place. And fourth place, Barbados, 92.8 points. The Red Force finished 92.0 points after Barbados. The West Indies Academy finishing 71.6 points. And second to last is Jamaica on 59.4 points. Combined campuses and colleges finishes in 30.2 points.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you.
So, oddly, what place did Jamaica?
Jamaica. I am surprised that the other team, what? Combined campuses, that they beat us for last. I didn't know nobody could have taken away that from us.
Right. Okay.
That's
okay,
the game sometimes.
We play no cricket at all, is it, boy?
Yeah. Any questions? Any questions for anybody from that? The ICC came out with their awards, and the men's cricketer of the year goes to Pat Cummins. The runners-up were Travis Head, Virat Kohli, and Ravindra Jadeja. But Pat Cummins, Men Cricketer of the Year for 2023 from the ICC Awards. Questions?
He has really showed his hand. He has established himself as a good captain. I personally against fast bowler being captain and support of him. But he has grown as a batsman, especially since he became captain. Because he was, in my book, he was regarded as I regard him as a tail ender. But this guy is going down there and he's batting like and not just pushing either. He's hitting the ball hard, you know. So he has grown really into the captaincy, and I think he deserves it totally.
Okay, the men's ODI cricketer of the year. Any question for you, Ivor? Quick, Ivor. Anything you're saying?
I wanted a chance to talk about to congratulate Guyana on winning the tournament.
Go ahead,
the Louis brothers of the Saint Kitts, the batsman and the all-rounder. And I am advocating for both of those guys, McHale and his brother, to be on the West Indies 15-man squad
against
England.
Jeremiah.
I am advocating for those two guys to be included. I have done
I was hoping outside this evening, Ivor. I was really hoping, but time would not permit us. Go ahead.
Ivor, yes, so they're brothers?
Yes.
Yeah, the two brothers. Yes.
It's two Batman and a Batman Boy.
I think it's about time that Sinkett get the first international cricketer on the West Indies men's international team.
Both of them is Batman.
No. One is an opening batsman and an all rounder. The fast bowler. The older one is a fast bowler.
Just hope they're in the 20s, and don't tell me they have to wait any longer.
Because
someone was talking about the one that make a couple of hundred or something like that. So I heard about him.
That's a younger one. I think he's about 23 years old. He's very consistent. And
that's very good.
No the all rounder too. He's on point. I think they're due. So congratulations again to Guyana. And Leeward did very well because they played without their original captain, the fast bowler, the Azari Joseph. Mm-hmm. And the last match, they played without the captain.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think Wayne saved the Windward Islands in the last match. Otherwise, we had a chance of at least coming second. But Guyana, I have to give it to them because the only match they lost was against the Leeward Islands.
Yeah. You're right. And the Leeward Islands should have lost the match. The previous match they lost against Barbados at all, they should have drawn the match. And it would have been
and Leeward should not have lost the first match, too, against the
Academy.
The Academy, yes. Otherwise, they would have been sailing smoothly to the top if they didn't lose that match. And they should have beaten Barbados, too.
Yes, should have beaten Barbados, yes.
And they should have a draw. They should have drawn the match. I think a draw would have been more practical. Yes.
Anything else before we move on? Let's move on because we're going to come up to a question, Simon. We have plenty of questions for you, from you. Any questions? So we talked about the Cricketer of the Year, the Men's Cricketer of the Year. We talk about the Men's ODI Cricketer of the Year. Guess who is the Men's Emerging Cricketer of the Year? Anybody knows? Is it Gerald Coetzee? Is it Dishan Mahashankar? Or is it Yashbaj Jaswal?
You would tell us in the essence of time, Leon. We don't know.
Russian Ravindra, the New Zealander, Indian New Zealander.
Yeah. Is he the Cricket of the Year?
No, the emerging. Men.
Oh, emerging.
Men's Emerging Cricketer of the Year.
And is that Ravindra?
Yes, Ravindra.
Oh, okay, thank you.
And the runners-up were Coetzee, Dishan Mahashankar, and then Yashim Jaswal, Virgil guy from Standerboard.
India.
Chandrapur. The men's test cricketer of the year, namely, Travis Head, Ravi Ashwin, and Joe Root. The winner is Usman Khawaja. Pronunciation is killing me with these cricket names. So you got that, Simon? The Men T20 Cricketer of the Year? Anybody can guess? Sikandar Raza.
Oh. From Zimbabwe.
No, wait, I'm calling the runners-up.
okay.
Chapman. Regina. I can't pronounce his name. Sikandar Raza and the T20 Cricketer of the Year is Suryakumar Yadav.
Yadav,
the guy from India, the middle order batsman. I think he deserves it, man. He hits some balls.
Rated number one. For a while, I haven't checked the list recently, but he has been number one for a while.
and the Men's Associate Cricketer of the Year. Anybody can guess? The lady.
No.
The lady is the cricketer from Holland.
Oh, the lead.
Lead. And the Women Awards, Women Cricketer of the Year, Nat Shiva Brun. The Women T20 Cricketer of the Year, anybody can guess that one? Everybody knows that one.
Oh, Hayley Matthews.
Hayley Matthews.
She's not the Women T20. She's the T20 Player of the Year, period.
T20 Cricketer of the Year. T20
yes,
Cricketer
male
of the Year.
She's the number, yeah, the best. Period. Male
female.
In
both men
male
and women? That's what you're saying?
Yes.
T20
yes.
Cricketer of the Year.
Because
no,
but
it's a woman. Women's T20 Cricketer of the Year. Yeah.
Okay.
That's what it's saying.
Continue, because I know she won the award for being the best T20 player. Period.
No.
Yeah, but that was the wisdom awarded her that.
No?
Oh,
wisdom.
That's
Okay. Hayley Matthews, okay? The Woman ODI Cricketer of the Year. Atapata. That's the lady from
Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka. Matt Shriver, Arlene Gardner, and Alina Kerr. These are the runners up. And the Women's Emergent Player of the Year. Roby Lichard, Litchfield. Anybody knows that lady? Phoebe Richford, Litchfield, and the Woman Associate Cricketer of the Year. Let's call her Abby. Abby's her last name. And the Umpire of the Year, Ivor Henry. Richard Illingworth. And the
Richard Illingworth. Okay.
And the Spirit of Cricket Award went to Zimbabwe.
What did they do? Forget that.
Spirit of the Award?
They didn't make any appeal to the umpires.
Oh.
So there was no need for them to show any dissent to the umpire.
you ever played in a village where that happens? In your country, Nevis or St. Kitts or Jamaica? They never stone you? When you go to a village in Antigua and you go to a certain village, man, and you beat them?
In Antigua.
They stone you.
Well, I have one better than that. You didn't have to. You didn't have to play any game. You didn't have to beat anybody. Mm-hmm. When you used to go to Brown Hill, they call it the Bronx in Nevis.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting stoned when you're coming out. You better put down the tarpaulin in the truck because there's stone in the truck coming out of there. Had nothing to do with winning or losing. It was just a tradition. They just stoned the vehicle.
So they're practicing for mango season.
Target practice for mangoes. They stone the vehicles, man. And that's true story.
That happened to me. That happened to my vehicle when I was young.
You told us about an event where you went somewhere. I don't know if it's cricket or soccer though, and they stone you guys. Maybe
we
you weren't in it, but you're from Antigua.
We went to St. Kitts.
St. Kitts? Yes.
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 And they stone us. We beat them 1-0 and they stone us. We have a radio commentator. And he just keep me provoking the people in St. Kitts, man. Because he broadcasting the He broadcast into Antigua, and he said, man, they're firing stones. And Tyree said that they fire more. And he's the only one get hurt, you know.
Uh-oh.
I'm telling you, He called to me and said, come, Pete Hillier. Come, Hillier. He's standing up talking, commentating on Antigua, and stones are firing. I said, let's get to the hotel. He was bleeding.
You know, another thing about in those days, Leon, you can look back on it now and say, look, this has to happen, but everybody came out virtually unscathed. Now they're not throwing stones again. The bullets coming at you. You know,
and moral of the story, Audley, the Prime Minister Bradshaw caught the guy and asked the guy to come back to St. Kitts to give evidence. He said, me? No way.
Mr.
Bradshaw catch the guy and say, listen, I'm going to make you pay for that. You have no right to be singing in bottles. But bottles was flying left, right, and center. But none hit me, man. Me and Scout, a guy by the name of Scout Christian. I stay called Scout. He was huge.
Apparently that guy saying, look, I went over there and I got stoned. So you know what? I'm going to stay at home and drink and get stoned the other way.
So, Peter Hillier, he said, I said, listen, let's get out. How can you be here provoking them? Oh, we did this to them. My goodness. I'm sending that back to you. And they get upset. And they were anyway, let's get to the ICC men's team of the year. Who's the captain? I don't know. Osman Khawaja.
Khawaja is not captain for Australia. So
No. I'm going to start with the team.
Okay.
In what version? You said team of the year.
Test
2020.
Test team of the year. Khawaja. Kanton Ratney. That's I'm sure Sri Lankan. Kane Williams.
Yeah.
Joe Root in number 4. Travis Head. Ravindra, the Jeja, oh my guy, that's the best all around the world. Alex Carey, Pat Cummins, Ravindra, Ashwin, number 9, Mitchell Stark, and Stuart Broad. Stuart Broad, Mitchell Stark, Ashwin, Cummins, Carey, Jadeja, Travis Head, Joe Root, Kane Williamson, and Kanu Ratney, and then of course Khawaja. Anybody questions?
So
I suspect they don't give it comments, or they may give it to William. I don't think so. I think they'll give it. You don't think so? They'll give it to.
I think it's Cummins.
Cummins. Mm-hmm. The men's ODI team of the year: Roy Sharma, Shubman Gill, Travis Head, Virat Kohli, Daryl Mitchell, Henry Klassen, Marco Jensen. Oh, yes, that's a good pick for the young man. Adam Zampa. Oh, Adam Zampa get picked for the ODI. And he went for 100 something in an over. In a 10-minute.
In one match.
Mohammed Siraj and Kuldeep Yadav, well-deserving, and Mohammed Sharmi. So again, Roy Sharma, Gill, Travis Head, Virat Kohli, Daryl Mitchell, Henry Klassen, Marco Jensen, Adam Zampa, Mohammed Siraj, and Yadav, and Mohammed Sharmi. Any questions? Any
India
comments?
Six. You know that India has about 6 in the team?
Yep. In the ODI, yes. So, and then the ICC.
I guess the captain would be Sharma.
Sharma, yeah. Yes. Sharma,
Rohit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hitman.
Yeah, they won it, yes. Mm-hmm. Marco, yeah. There's no competition with him in this at all. Okay, now, the T20 Cricket of the Year, and J, J, Who will love this team? Jazzwell, Phil Salt, Pura, Nicholas Pura, and get a pick, number three. Yarov, Mark Chapman. Mark Chapman? Mark who? Never hear much about him, but he scored some good runs.
Chapman is number three, I think. Nothing is from New Zealand.
New Zealand player, yes. Mm. Raza. Sukanda Raza, the Zimbabwe player. Raza. And
Sukanda Raza.
Ramjahi, number seven. He's number seven from Uganda.
Okay.
And Mark Adir from Ireland. Oh, my goodness. Ravi Bishnoi from India. Richard Nagana, and he's from Zimbabwe. And the final pick was Ashdeep Singh from India. So again, yeah, Jaswell, Salt, Puran, Yadav, Chapman, Raza, Ramzari, Adair, Pat Bishnoi, Richard Nagangwa, and then Singh. That's the lineup. And the women, any questions, any comments?
Hey, I wonder who's the captain of that team, that 2020 team.
Can you mention the captain? I guess they put a little C against their names just to indicate who will be the captain. We'll have to make our own guess, I guess. Phil Salt, Nicholas Puran, man.
Shimak Puran have the captain that team.
Yeah, Puran had the captain, this guy. Yeah, he's number three. And just feel so. But he'd make us proud if they had said so. But none of nothing. Quickly for the ladies, before we come to Simon. Player, women, ODI team of the year, Phoebe Litchfield, Shami Atapatu. I can't pronounce his name again. Atapatu. Yeah, well, Patahat. Okay, number three, Emma Kerr. I'm just going to call her the last name, Kerr. Number five is Mooney, and she here is from Australia. Spiver Brunt, she's English. And then Gardner, Australia, in seventh position. Anne Ben Sutherland, Australia. And Nadine de Kerk, South Africa. And Lee Tinghichu, and she's from New Zealand. And Nadia Akka from Bangladesh. Finally, a T20 team, Atapatu, Sri Lanka. Mooney, Australia, number two. Laura Woodard, South Africa. Haley Matthews, number four, West Indies. Nat Chivand, or Ward, England. Kerr, New Zealand. Perry, Australia. Gardner, Australia. Dilip Sharma, India. And England has Sophie Eskostone, and the final player is Meg Schutz from Lanning. Australia. Not Lanning, Schutz.
S-C-H-U-S-F.
Yeah, so just a brief information about them, and we can go over them another time.
Can you give me 30 seconds on what time is over? The all-time
appeal. You want to answer Simon questions as well, one time, so we can get over
this. Just give me 30 seconds. Give me 30 seconds. All-time IPL team, somebody told all-time IPL team. David Warner, Chris Gayle, Shane Watson, A.B. de Villiers, Josh Butler, Kieran Pollard, Andre Russell, Dwayne Bravo, Rashid Khan, Sunil Narain, and Lasith Malinga. An impact sub is Mr. Rabada. Note about five West Indians in the all-time team. Back to you.
ODI, you say?
No, T20, IPL, IPL all-time
team.
IPL all-time team.
Anybody have any comment? I don't think I have much comment. That guy didn't play the Australian wicket keeper didn't play.
You're talking about for the
IPL.
IPL, the whole IPL. So over the series, the span of the season, the time, the duration of the time in the IPL. So based on that, I guess the two best openers win David Warner, Chris Gayle, Shane Watson as the all-rounder, A.B. de Villiers, wicketkeeper, batsman, Josh Butler players, wicketkeeper, opener, you know, Kieran Pollard, Russell all-rounder, Bravo, Khan, Narayan, Malinga, and Rabada. So that's what they
came. No place for Stokes?
No.
Maybe
it's you have to perform over a period of time, you know, to get on that team.
Oh, Simon, question for you now, quickly, Simon. Simon, this lady is a doctor, and she's a writer. Are you there, Simon?
I'm listening to you.
Yeah, she's a doctor, and she is... She specialized in... What's her specialty again? I didn't have a printout here.
Her name is Dr. Dawn Marie Armstrong. She's a research and teaching fellow at Loughborough University in England. And she is the founder and principal psychologist of Afro Sport Psych. And he had just written a couple of very impactful, if I might use that verb, very impactful letters. One which says cricket players deserve to be paid and the lack of compensation for local cricket player is a regional problem in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And she came on our show as our guest and blew us away, in my opinion, with her explanation, discussion, and comments. And I really think that she should be a keynote speaker somewhere.
Yeah, she is worth repeating.
Yeah. So,
as we thought that she was excellent, and she, well, she's in England, right? And that's, you know, the time. And by the way, speaking about England, we haven't heard from Hyacinth. We wondered if anything happened to her. And I find my phone not receiving her calls. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But anyway.
I would have... You'll have to give me her number, Leon. I didn't have her number to call her.
I can give her a number. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, send it to me and I can give her
a call. Yes, that's it, John. Any questions?
I thought your guy would have noticed what the team I named. You know that not one Indian is in the team? So, you know, that's have to be the summary. Indian is named in the team. And, you know, Dhoni would have to be there. You know?
Why no Indian in the team? In the team.
The all-time IPL I'm talking. Yeah.
It might have had to do with the era of, because I think Dhoni probably came later than Gayle. And so when you think about it, all the players that were named were great players of that particular era, Mike.
But Narayan has been there and come right down, and Dhoni's still playing. He has been there for a long while. Plenty of those guys. So, hey.
It's shocking that Kohli or Dhoni would not have made it, right? True.
Kohli made the most centuries in IPL.
Mm-hmm.
Over what period of time? Anyway, we have 30 seconds, so let me just say to folks that you've never been inspired until you have listened to the Caribbean Global Voices, the entertainment hour, the entertainment show at 1-563-999-3693. That's blogtalkradio.com/Caribbean Global Voices. Saturday, 9 till 12. Don't miss it. It's the inspirational hour. It is the awesomest inspiration and entertainment on talk radio.
Okay, any questions? Anybody want to final comment?
Okay, I just want to leave this thought with you by Doug Feierberg. He said, every day do something that will inch you closer to a better tomorrow. So sometimes it's not the here and the now, but make sure it inches to a better tomorrow. Have a great week. God bless you.
God bless you also. And I just want to tell you folks, if you haven't seen the Bob Marley movie, I don't know how many of you have seen it, but it's worth viewing. It's not too long. It's not too morbid. You know, I thought they were bringing about his death and so, but I wasn't in it. I just saw it when he was struggling with it. It's a nice little movie for a relaxing evening.
Yes. And the music is good.
The music is good too, yeah.
Simon, your final word.
Yes, good evening to all. Have a wonderful week all. And see you back here next week, Sunday, from 6 to 9. Have a wonderful week. And be safe.
Thank you, Simon. I'm glad to be. Okay. Ivor, you want to go or is it Virgil? Virgil, come on in.
Yes. Yeah. Good night to all the panelists and good night to all the listeners. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys again next week.
Okay. Ivor, your final words, Audley.
Okay, yeah. I'll jump ahead of the ladies.
Unless
you want the ladies to come.
Yeah, let the ladies come. Lady?
Yeah.
Donna, Lady Donna, wonderful presentation tonight. Everybody talking about in the background. You didn't hear them, right? You didn't hear what they said?
Yes. Once again, nice show, and have a very vocal woman there who is very passionate about cricket, Dr.
Yes.
Dawn. Dawn. So she's very passionate about what she's doing. I enjoyed her presentation. So sorry that we have this time, you know, the time zone difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when she comes back again. But
you
have a good week,
early.
Everybody. And we meet back here next week.
God willing.
Okay.
Oh. Merchant, your final thoughts. Did we share? Oh, yes, we share about mom.
Yes. I too was impressed with the young lady. I hope she continue with full force in her quest for her all her endeavors.
All right.
All gentlemen on the panel, and see you next week. God bless.
And remember, next week you're wrapping the Focus on the Law 42, Mercury, so check your mailbox.
Okay, I will. Thanks.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Good night to all, everyone. How about you, Ivor? And then Audley, and then.
Yes, I'd be happy to. We keep saying 42 laws, but Dennis forgets it's 43 laws. And I hope we all can get in on law 43, which is the common sense law. Yes, when it comes to cooking.
You're
so,
presenting that one to us, Ivor.
Mm-hmm. I'd be delighted to.
Yeah.
Well, folks, another week, and I think we're getting to the end of the month in terms of presentation for the cricket show. So we have to say kudos to, I almost said February, to April. The time is running so far. This next week would be the last one, so let's make it a good one for next week, gentlemen, to take April out with a bang. Again, I'm going to be rooting for the boys down in St. Kitts, the Louis brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that the selectors, the West Indies selectors, and the captain should have a big input into that, because Craig Brathwaite was there. He played against them. He saw what those guys can do. So if he has any input, he needs a partner. Probably should raise his hand and say, my batting partner is Mikhail Louis. You would have seen him play. And some people say he's not really easy in the eyes, but he's productive. So that's what I am counting on. Apart from that...
Wait a minute. Is Craig Brathwaite easy in the eyes?
Good grief. Is Craig Brockett easy on the eyes?
No, no, no. Point make.
Not at all.
Point make.
Huh?
Not at all.
Is Chandler Paul easy on the eye?
No. The runs on the board will count. He's not going there and suck up 25 dot balls in 6 overs.
Right. So that's what I have to say. I have to take a page out of a line out of Virgil's book there. Runs and wickets. That is what make cricket. So these guys have produced runs, and the all-rounder produced runs and wickets. And I think they had a good level playing head. Well supported by the parents, and I sure it'll be good to bolster what's happening in St. Kitts and Nevis. Permit me to say that, Liam. There's a spate of shooting going on down in St. Kitts, and I think this can be a plus
exactly.
If these two guys can get a call up to just drown out all that senseless assassination that they have going on in St. Kitts at this time. So I'm rooting for these two guys to stem the tides of this utter nonsense that's going on down there, and to put St. Kitts, especially St. Kitts, in a more positive light. If they can only get one, if not two, international cricketers on the men's West Indies senior team.
For years, I have been rooting for Jeremiah to be on the side.
Let's just roar like a lion for these guys.
Yeah.
They're hearing us, like I tell you. It's the only show in all of North America that bring you exclusive cricket on a Sunday. So they are listening. You just have to say it loud. And all of us, if we roar in unison, I believe they will hear us.
Yes,
make it a great week, everybody. We have birthdays coming up this week, like I said, on the weekend there for Sister Ella and my son Vaughn.
My one grandson coming up on Wednesday.
Yes, I think Virgil having a birthday too already did mention that to me earlier.
Yeah. Virgil
have
a birthday?
Some of those.
Right.
Yeah, I think he has a brother. Already did mention that to me earlier. And your grandson. We had a talk earlier this afternoon. And Ollie kept me up, so I sort of fell asleep. I beg your pardon.
All right.
I have to go back and listen to the show.
Well, gentlemen, it has been a pleasure, extreme pleasure to be host of the show. I enjoyed the conversation quite well. Simon, we kept you up late past your bedtime, so I deliberately leave you for last and not to interrupt all proceedings until circumstantially end. You don't mind, do you? Simon, good night all. Let's listen to the duo party.
What this dying world could use is a willing man of God, who dares to go against the grain and work without applause. A man who'll raise the shield of faith, protecting what is pure, whose love is tough and gentle, a man whose word is sure.
God doesn't need an orator who knows just what to say. He doesn't need authorities to reason him away.
He doesn't need an army to guarantee a win. He just needs a few. Who laugh and love and cry. Men who'll face eternity and not afraid to die. Men who'll fight for freedom and honor once again. He just needs a few good men.
He calls the broken derelict, life has been renewed.
He calls the one who has the strength to stand up for the truth. Enlistment lines are open and he wants you to come in.
just needs a few good men. Men full of compassion, who laugh and love and cry. Men who'll face eternity and aren't afraid to die. Men who'll fight for freedom and honor once again. Need a few good men. Men full of compassion, who laugh and love and cry. Men who'll face eternity and aren't afraid to die. Men who'll fight for freedom and honor once again. Needs a few good men. Men full of compassion, who laugh and love and cry. Men who'll face eternity and aren't afraid to die. Men who'll fight for freedom and honor.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.